Hello, Seattle. This is Dr. Crazier Frame, and I'm listening to Smart Asses Radio with Johnny Video and Geek Goddess Jackie.
Oh, for the love of God, my internet cut out. Roz!
Holy podcast, Batman!
Right, you are, Robin, to the Batcave!
We've got to listen to Smart Asses Radio.
Hurry, chump!
Smart Asses Radio. Hot chicks, geek culture, and unbridled smartassery.
This is madness! This is Smartasses!
Hey, Homer.
Hey, Mo.
Hey, Krusty, Bonnie, Sideshow Bob. What are you guys doing over there?
We're listening to Smart Asses Radio.
Yep. Sure are funny.
I beg to differ. I find their sophomoric humor to be anemic at best.
Don't put a sock in it.
Yeah, well, we'll put a stick up your butt.
To become a smartassaholic, check out our online magazine at smartasses.net for replays of our radio show's audio humor, pay-per-view predictions, the Smartasses Hot Chick of the Month, and official Smartasses paraphernalia, as well as entertainment articles, videos, celebrity news, free sarcastic e-cards, geek culture, and one of the four largest annual top 100 sexiest women lists in the world. Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com @smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that will be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will make you listen to Smartasses Radio.
Good luck.
Hey, smartasses, it's the governor over here. When I'm not filming my movies or porking the maid, I'm sure as hell not putting my ear to the computer and listening to your show. Fuck you. And that horse you put the saddle on. I won't be back. Fuck all of you.
To interact with Smartasses Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the hosts at SmartassesNet using the hashtag HailJackie. Smart Asses Radio. To call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype.
Good morning, good evening, how do you do, how do you be, whether you are one of our good friends just going to bed in Italy or just getting home from work here in the Western Hemisphere. I am your host, not Mr. Rourke, no, but Johnny Hollywood Video, and welcome to Smartasses Radio, where if you're like me, my March Madness wish is that someday, Alonzo Mourning will stop me in the middle of a pickup game to talk about Obamacare. That's how that one works. Welcome to Smartasses Radio, where if you're like me, it's opening day, and the Houston Astros and Miami Marlins have already been mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. That's how that works. Where if you're like me, you're thinking Pete Rose. I think the last thing you want to tell Reds country when you're being interviewed between innings is that you live in Las Vegas. That's how that works, folks, if you're keeping score at home. So are you glad baseball is back? Are you liking the madness, the March madness? How many of you picked the Final Four correctly? I know for me, once Arizona and Dayton and the UCL cheerleaders went out this week, I completely lost interest. So that's kind of how that works. So and as for baseball, I'm pretty excited about my fantasy team, the Columbus Nads, and I can already hear a lot of you shouting "Go Nads, beat 'em!" Out there. But yes, it's sophomoric, but it's a hell of a lot more innovative than the 69ers. But anyway, yeah, my team is it's actually pretty stacked. I got my boy Carlos Santana at catcher. Miguel Cabrera at third, Troy Tulowitzki at shortstop, and of course a couple of New York Mets with Curtis Granderson, who struck out three times today, and Bartolo Colon on the team. So yeah, I'm excited, and you know, I have to see what baseball great Jeff Archer, our guest on the show in the second hour, thinks of my lineup when he comes on the show later on. Also, I want to tell everyone, if you've kept a journal, if you've begun creating a Johnny Video Wikipedia page, if you've kept a whiteboard in your basement replete with the following information, it is now time to update your facts, as I am now, much to the pleasure of my boss, Geek Goddess Jackie, officially on board with the rest of you when it comes to The Walking Dead. Now, I know there was a lot of heat yesterday over the finale for Season 4, but I myself... Well, I am now halfway through Season 3, and I no longer view it as just another crappy version of Lost. I'm now through Season 3 on Netflix, and I believe I can sum up the show in one word. If you've never watched it, I can now sum up The Walking Dead for you in one word. Romp. It is a romp. I am digging it. I am digging throwing rocks at zombies. I'm loving every minute of it. So, anyway, you are now officially updated on the goings-on with Johnny Video. Anyway, the chat room is open, folks, if you'd like to chat with the show, or you can always send us a tweet at SmartAssesNet using the hashtag HailJackie. And just to spread the word on exactly how Twitter works, folks, remember, if a retweet is the equivalent of a fireworks grand finale, favoriting a tweet doesn't even amount to one of those little black hockey puck snakes you light on the sidewalk. So that's how. A lot of people don't really understand how Twitter works. When you favorite one of our tweets, you've done absolutely nothing to help us. So just so you are aware of how that works. Anyway, with that said, we want you to definitely stay on SmartMarkRadio.com after this show is over and listen to yesterday's episode of Pro Wrestling Weekend, when Rick Jarrett and Frankie Andolini discussed everything from the world of TNA and WWE and welcomed their special guest, the Red and Black Knight Doomsday, to the show. As well, be sure you are tuned in next Sunday, this is kind of important, at a special early start time for their world-renowned WrestleMania Challenge. And all I can say is expect some big stars to be part of that show. I know Lawrence St. Victor from The Bold and the Beautiful, a former guest on this show, is going to be on that broadcast giving his WrestleMania predictions, so you don't want to miss that out. And then, of course, this Wednesday, make sure to catch the SMR Hip Hop Stop with the Lyrical Miracle R.I.C. and his new co-host, Hill Jack. And on Thursdays, you can also catch the SMR version of Paranormal Conspiracy Theory Radio when your hosts Chris Ames and Johnny Wadd go beyond the truth. I believe last week I said Johnny Ward, and he is a British comedian who's been on this show. It's Johnny Wadd. But every Thursday they go beyond the truth. And then this Friday on the brand new show of the SMR family, it's The Hit List with Tony T. And this week is also going to be a special WrestleMania show. That's a tongue twister. Also, if you're a fan of social media, you'll want to take part in the new drinking game that goes in conjunction with Tony's show and has really taken the world by storm. Much like people are supposed to chug a beer whenever Rick Lieb says on Sunday, with that being said, on Pro Wrestling Weekend, Tony's fans delight in doing a shot whenever he says, ladies and gentlemen, or sipping a beer whenever he says, you know what. And just for a point of reference, last week he said 12 ladies and gentlemen and 92 you know what's in a two-hour period. So if you were playing the game, Well, chances are you still haven't recovered from your alcohol poisoning. That's all I got to say about that. So, but it was a great show. Great, great, great show. He interviewed a professional body piercer. And so you can expect that and future adult antics when you listen to the Hit List Radio on Friday nights here on Smart Mark Radio. So. And then, of course, next week right here on Smartasses Radio, speaking of wrestling, speaking of hot chicks, geek culture, and unbridled smartassery, we have four-timer to Smartasses Mag's Top 100 Sexiest Women Alive, former TNA Knockout and actress Tia Rosita Trinidad. Plus, the Pebbles connection continues. We have Antonio Reed Jr. on the show tonight when we are joined by her daughter and Antonio's sister, the other co-host of Read All About It Radio, Ashley Reed. So, with that said, forget the hometown hoochies, folks. I strongly encourage you to go to smartasses.net and check out our March 2014 Hot Chick of the Month from the dark side of Germany, the gothic alternative fetish model Niobe Noir. Just go to smartasses.net and click on the link for Hot Chick of the Month. And, of course, starting tomorrow, April 1st, all the way through June 30th, speaking of Tia Trinidad, you'll be able to see next week's guest, yes, Tia Trinidad, our number 16 Sexiest Woman Alive of 2014, as our premier Hot Chick of the Month of the Year. Yes, folks, she is our Miss April, May, June for 2014, the one, the only, Tia Rosita Trinidad. And speaking of which, if you've been living under a rock, Smartasses Magazine revealed our 2014 Top 100 Sexiest Women Alive list just two Mondays ago, so you will need to go straight over to smartasses.net while you listen to this show and peruse what has been by far our most popular Top 100 list out of the nine we have done so far. So, and we'd also like to remind you that if you would like to advertise on Smartasses Radio, we are heard on three different worldwide networks, and best of all, your ads will live forever in our wildly popular archives. So if you'd like to sign up, you can advertise with us for as low as $2.50 a month. You see all these animal rescue shelters saying, you know, rescue a puppy, it costs less than a cup of coffee a day. This costs less than a cup of coffee a month. So just head over to smartasses.net and click on the advertising link at the bottom of the page for details. So anyway, on that note, we do have a great show lined up for you tonight. In the second hour, as most of you already know, we will be joined by author and baseball expert Jeff Archer, a.k.a. Malcolm LaGauche, in the first hour. Or in the second hour, and then in the first hour, one half of the hosting team, I kind of alluded to this already, at Read All About It Radio, the son of music producer L.A. Reed and R&B legend Pebbles, Antonio Reed Jr. joins the show. But before we get into that, we are going to take our first commercial break, and when we get back, we will have this week's top 12 list, so stay tuned for that.
Wrestling Weekend on SmartMarkRadio.com.
So young.
I'm not afraid. Oh, my God. You did not just call me out. Really? Literally, though? You just call me out like that? How dare you? I have a cold, sir. Like, and then you're going to be calling me out of words friends like that.
Lanny Poffo. Lanny, thank you very much for being on the show this week.
I am the genius full of glory and renown, and I'm living in the past.
Miss F. Mocker.
You know, obviously I was with Kelly and Layla, and we had no choice but to get close, and then over time, you know, it becomes natural. But it is, seriously, you eat a shit sandwich every day for a very long time.
Mr. James J. Dillon.
You know, you talk about the greatest manager of all time. I've always regarded Bobby the Brain Heenan as the guy that set the standard for the rest of us.
Camille Ford.
What do you do other than watch my show?
I watch your show and sleep. That's it.
I bet you have the body of a 19-year-old athlete with a schedule like that.
Yes. You ever seen those pictures of Zeus?
You literally are the Greek god.
Whatever. Diamond Dallas Page.
You want to know what I really thought? I thought, these guys know what they're doing. This is the WWF. I've got no heat here. This is just going to bring out the best in Taker.
Yeah, Cam. Welcome to the show.
That's why I've always been happier here, is that they really like to feature the girls. They really like us to show off our athletic ability and, you know, be beautiful at the same time.
Sunday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Smart Mark Radio. Did you know you can advertise on SmartS's radio for as low as $2.50 a month? Visit SmartS's.net or SmartMarkRadio.com and click on the advertising link at the bottom of the page. Want to catch all of Smart Mark Radio on your Android? Go to SmartMarkRadio.com and download our Android app for only $2.99. Want to keep up with SmartS's radio? Subscribe to our RSS feed on SmartMarkRadio.com. Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com. This summer.
Well, good morning to you too, sleepyhead. How about some bagels in bed and an afternoon crossword puzzle?
CIA agent Brian Mills returns.
Kim, find your mother and dial 911.
In the sequel to the sequel to the sequel.
Someone has taken our Sunday paper again.
What are you going to do?
All right, I'm going to leave a note on the door. How's this sound? I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for coupons, I can tell you they won't save you that much money. Oh, I also have a very particular set of skills. Skills that make me a nightmare for paperboys like you. If you return my newspaper now, even if it's just the comic section, and maybe the sports section. Yeah, I like sports. Oh, and my wife does want to do the crossword, but that's it. You do that, and that will be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will bend your bicycle wheel.
Liam Neeson stars in Non-Stop Taken Sunday Paper. Coming soon to a theater near you.
To become a smartassaholic, check out our online magazine at smartasses.net for replays of our radio show's audio humor, pay-per-view predictions, the Smartasses Hot Chick of the Month, and official Smartasses paraphernalia, as well as entertainment articles, videos, celebrity news, free sarcastic e-cards, geek culture, and one of the four largest annual top 100 sexiest women lists in the world.
Hello, adult boys and adult girls. This is DJ Rhiannon telling you that you need to spice up your sexy time right now. Did you know that accessories in the bedroom are a must? Well, they are. And you are absolutely missing out if you haven't bought anything from Pure Romance by Melissa Lee. This online store has everything. From must-haves like battery-operated vibrators to make you squirm in your panties, to sex toy classics like Mr. Dependable or the Double Banger if you really want to get the party going. But she also carries tons of fun warm-up accessories too, like lingerie, bath and body products, books, and fantasy foreplay stuff like blindfolds, cozy cuffs, tie-me-up tape, floggers, crops, nipple clamps, and I'm feeling spicy just talking about it. Pure Romance by Melissa Leeb is the ultimate one-stop shop for your sexy time needs. Check out our site and see what tickles your fancy. MelissaLieb.pureromance.com. Adult boys and adult girls, you know all of us desire and deserve good quality sexy time. So, all of us desire and deserve Pure Romance by Melissa Leeb.
Nothing spells a Carps baseball game like a bag of Bobby O's potato chips.
Hi, Uncle Rose.
Oh, no.
Can we have some of your Bobby O's potato chips?
No. If I've told you kids once, I've told you 1,000 times. You can't have any of my Bobby O's potato chips.
Aw, come on, Uncle Rose. Even Fluffy wants some.
Oh, no. Not you, too.
Yes, everybody loves Bobby O's potato chips. Available now at your local Boondock, Montana grocer.
Hello, Carps fans. It's me, Lefty Mayshak, the old Nuxa. You know, using the Nux on my left hand won me a lot of games for the Boondock Carps, but they're not all that great for enjoying a handful of tasty Bobby O's potato chips. Bobby O's potato chips. They're salty, they're crunchy, and now available in lemon, lime, and grape.
Hey, when I'm not busy being the governor of Montana.
Jesse, you were never the governor of Montana.
Oh, what the hell do you know, McMahon?
My name isn't McMahon.
Anywho, when I'm not busy being the governor of South Dakota or telling you about conspiracies, I'm listening to Smartass's radio, eh?
Jesse, you were never the governor of South Dakota either.
Aw, Montana, South Moncota, who cares? They all grow potatoes better than they do in Colorado.
To interact with Smartass's radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the hosts at SmartassesNet using the hashtag Hail Jackie. Smartass's Radio. To call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype. And now, back to Smartass's Radio.
Mitch. I might have to add Ramstein to my repertoire. Actually, speaking of voices, I should maybe do that movie voice a little bit more often. The sequel to the sequel to the sequel. I think I might have to incorporate that into the show a little bit. That's kind of a badass movie trailer voice right there. In the sequel to the sequel to the sequel to the sequel. Anyway, you know, if you were around in biblical times, folks, and I'm sure some of you were, you already know that in a world ravaged by human sin, Noah was given a divine mission to build an ark to save creation from the ensuing flood. Well, they made a movie about that this week starring Russell Crowe as Noah. And from what I understand, though, the movie opened to $95 million at the box office, it was met with quite a few mixed results. So what we have here, with that said, what we have for you now are the top 12 things overheard at the premiere of Noah. I think we need a drum roll for that. The top 12 things overheard at the premiere of Noah. If you're ready, let's go. So number 12. So let me get this straight. Noah is Superman's father? Is that... number 11, $20 says we see two pissed off unicorns standing on the shore. That actually makes a lot of sense. Number 10, I think I just spotted Malaysian Flight 370 off the starboard stern. Leave it to the movies to find the plane. Number 9, how long before Charlton Heston and Captain Jack Sparrow part the water so the boat can land? There it is. A little late with the phony audience on that one. Number 8, so is Alonzo Mourning going to stop by and explain the importance of Obamacare to the animals? He could just pop up anywhere. Number 7, I thought God would sound a lot more like Morgan Freeman. That was, hello, Noah. Noah, I would like you to build an ark. Kind of how that works. Number 6, well, in Noah 2, those fallen angels turn into Transformers and explode. Number 5, is this the part where DiCaprio and Winslet scream, I'm the king of the world, or where the shark eats Richard Dreyfuss? Two movies for one in that joke there. Titanic and Jaws in one joke. Number 4, say what you will about his arc-building skills, but he's one hell of a center for the Chicago Bulls. maybe they have the wrong Noah there. Number 3, I thought there would be more Muppets. Where do the Muppets fit into all of this? Number 2, I hear the gang from Finding Bigfoot spotted a Yeti using the ship's porta-potty. The screen. And then, of course, well, we got to do the drum roll for this one. Let's get back up to it here. Here we go. Drum roll. The number one thing overheard at the premiere of Noah. Number 1, I'm so excited to see Ben Affleck in the Bat Noah costume. There you go. And that is your... There there you have your top 12 things overheard at the premiere of Noah. So on that note, please do stay tuned. We are going to take our second time out, but right after the break, we will have Read All About It Radio's Antonio Reed Jr. So stay tuned for that, folks. We will be right back in just a few minutes.
Have you called Dr. Amoson? She is a world-renowned board-certified trichologist who offers a microscopic hair and scalp analysis and effective treatments to address patchy hair loss, hair thinning, hair breakage, itchy, flaky, and dry scalp, and inflammation, to name a few. Call today, 817-265-8854. 817-265-8854. Once again, it's 817-265-8854.
We are all individually designed. Shouldn't our supplements and vitamins be also? ID Nutrition is an individually designed nutritional program based on verifiable nutritional science. Our products use the highest quality, clinically researched ingredients. Best of all, your ID Nutrition program is developed specifically for you, based on your needs, your goals, and your personal nutritional profile. We start with a free, simple, thorough, and confidential online assessment. And in just a few minutes, our patented ID assessment software develops a set of recommendations based on scientific studies targeted to your specific needs. Start to have the ID life today, the individually designed life, to maximize your overall health. Want to learn more? Please visit our website by going to www.liveyouridlife.com.
Hello, has this ever happened to you?
What's the matter, buddy?
Kramer! Kramer! I have to buy my girlfriend a gift, and I've only got $5 worth of loot!
Oh. Yeah, that is a problem.
Oh! Do you believe this guy?
What do I do?
Yeah, you need to put on your thinking cap, buddy.
He sounds just like me, Jerry!
What are you talking about?
Oh, Johnny Video, baby!
Come on, Newman! Think!
He doesn't sound anything like you!
I know. I'll get a personalized celebrity voice impersonation greeting from Johnny Video. Give me up.
Sorry, Jerry! I like him.
He's terrible, George. He's terrible.
Whoa. Someone's getting crabby. You need to eat more fruit. Plantains, Jerry. Plantains.
My fellow Americans, you know, we are living in troubled economic times. So, I would highly suggest you order personalized $5 celebrity voice impersonation greetings from JohnnyVideo.net for your next gift-giving event. I'm not President Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
To become a smartassaholic, check out our online magazine at smartasses.net for replays of our radio show's audio humor, pay-per-view predictions, the Smartasses Hot Chick of the Month, and official Smartasses paraphernalia, as well as entertainment articles, videos, celebrity news, free sarcastic e-cards, geek culture, and one of the four largest annual top 100 sexiest women lists in the world.
Somewhere over the rainbow lies a pot of gold that's short to make your next fundraising event a huge success. Rainbow Dust, the innovative and exciting project that is a must-have for any fundraiser, is the hottest interactive candy product on the market today. Visit www.myrainbowdust.com to see how Rainbow Dust can add magic to your next function. Find out why kids will be standing in line for their turn at making their own delicious Rainbow Dust candy creation. Use the promo code RADIO2 to receive free ground shipping. MyRainbowDust.com. Let the magic begin.
The Grand Hotel. Lewis's successful life is deceiving. His wife Pearl is still haunted by the sins of her youth. Yet something strange is brewing at the Grand Isle Gala. Suddenly, rivals' desire for power takes an ugly turn. Discover what will happen amidst the glamour and glitter of the annual gala, where a night of crime, of seething passion, ignite and explode. The Grand Hotel by author J.A. Jackson. Available exclusively at Amazon.com and Kindle Store.
Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com.
Don't be taken in by products that promise to meet your needs in a one-size-fit-all supplement. Studies have shown that every person's body and nutritional needs is different. That's why ID Life is uniquely formulated to offer individually designed supplements that are weight balancing, nutrition restorative, and energy sustaining. We also offer sleep strips, energy chews, appetite control chews, and meal replacement shakes. At ID Life, we understand that nutrition is personal. Your ID Nutrition Program is developed specifically for you based on your needs, your goals, and your personal nutritional profile. Get started today with a free, simple, thorough, and confidential online assessment in just a few minutes. Visit www.liveyouridlife.com. That's www.liveyouridlife.com.
Tired of sulfate-free hair products claiming to help your scalp condition? If so, you need clinically approved Dr. Amoson's Therapeutic Essentials. Get hair restoration and proven scalp relief today with Dr. Amoson's Therapeutic Essentials. Dr. Amoson has over 27 years of experience as a hair and scalp doctor. Purchase your products at 817-265-8854. That's 817-265-8854. Again, 817-265-8854.
When you've been lifting barrels and bales of hay and anvils and machine parts and 40-foot fuel injectors for the next space shuttle mission and bags of dirt around in your Ram truck all day, driving through 30 inches of mud in your Levi's jeans in the 100-degree desert in the middle of a nor'easter snowstorm while it's raining, cats and dogs in the Grand Canyon, and getting your Lee denim jacket and that 20-gallon cowboy hat of yours all wet while you're trying to eat your beans and tell tales of rustling cattle in your Ford Bronco while you smoke a Marlboro and a Camel next to your buddy Chevy Silverado while you're doing shots of whiskey and talking to the Undertaker about that tumbleweed that just blew by while you were thinking about beef and chewing skull bandits in the mountains of Montana while you're sitting around that campfire in your lamb's wool jacket and heating up that branding iron, scouring the boundary lines of that ranch you got in the good old heart of Texas while you're barbecuing spare ribs in the back of that Toyota Tundra and polishing your Colt 45 while you rub salve on those chafed thighs of yours you got from riding steeds and the handshake of that trusty old saddle while you're out herding buffalo and roping steer and wondering where your next pair of chaps and silver spurs are gonna come from as you're washing down that dust with an ice-cold bush and shooting tin cans off a fence post and growing mustaches with the sheriff. Well, that's where Smartass's Radio comes in. Smooth as a mountain stream.
To interact with Smartass's Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the host at SmartassesNet using the hashtag HailJackie. Smartass's Radio. To call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype. And now, back to Smartass's Radio.
He's been on Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. He's the son of music producer L.A. Reid and R&B legend Pebbles, one of my favorite people on the entire planet. And, of course, he is the co-host of Reid All About It Radio with his sister Ashley, who will be our guest on this show next week. Antonio Reid Jr., welcome to Smartass's Radio, my friend.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem, no problem. So did you catch that Avril Lavigne bumper music? Because I know
yes, I did.
Good, 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 because I know your dad is the one that discovered her. Now, I'm going to say this. In the 80s, Johnny Video occasionally will have celebrity crushes. Not very often, but I occasionally have celebrity crushes. Now, in the 80s, your mom was basically Aphrodite to me. And now, here in the 2000s, Avril Lavigne is basically Aphrodite to me. And you have connections to both of them, so it's just kind of wild when you think about it that way.
Yeah. Right, 6 degrees of separation kind of thing. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, and of course your mom was on this show back on November 11th of 2013, if anybody wants to listen to that. So anyway, real quick, kind of, I know you're real short on time this week, so I kind of truncating everything here, but kind of explain to people like what you do, who you are. We know you're the host of Read All About It Radio, but you know, that's kind of on hiatus now. Maybe let people know about the show, why it's on hiatus, and, you know, how you got to be famous.
Hilarious. Well, I don't know if I would really consider myself famous, but if somebody thinks so, hey, works for me. So basically, we do have a radio show, internet radio show. Right now we are on hiatus because the radio station is going through renovations. They're actually doing some remodeling and whatnot, and they're basically going to be upgrading the show. We had a lot of listeners and things like that, so they wanted to make sure that the show represents the rebrand properly in terms of the quality, and just giving the station an overall facelift so that everything looks better. So that's what we're doing right now. So we're off until they're finished with that. In terms of what I've done or what I do, I've worked in the music business probably 13, 14 years, something like that. The past 2 years, though, I have been making a transition to the film and TV business and doing things of that nature. I started out when I was younger as a songwriter and a producer, rapper, singer, all of these things. And then I went to work for my father at his publishing company. And then I became a suit, so to speak. And once I became a suit, you know, I kind of left my creative side behind. And I was, you know, managing artists, songwriters, producers, so on and so forth. And once that was done, my dad sold that company. I went to work for Epic Records before my dad was there, ironically enough. Now he's there. I went to work for Epic Records. And then my boss got fired. Once my boss got fired, then everyone that he hired was let go, too. Once that happened, I decided to, you know, basically reawakened my creative juices and began to be creative again. And I had an amazing idea for a cartoon, which I can't say much about because we're still in the development phases right now. But I decided to spend most of my time developing that. I got a team of people together, an animator and so on and so forth, and we've been doing that now for about, probably we've been developing it for about 2 years now.
Wow.
So that's where I'm at now.
What can you say about the cartoon? Like, is like a pilot, like just a matter of time, or is it like?
Yes. We're actually working on a sizzle reel right now. The pilot has been written. All of the characters have been developed. The drawing is completely finished. We're in the animation stage now. It's something similar to Family Guy or South Park or The Simpsons or you know, American Dad. It's along those lines. It's an adult cartoon, and I think it's a hit, and I've been getting a lot of interest and a lot of bites on it just based on the ideas so far. So we're just going into production just to make sure that before we go to networks, we are completely prepared and ready to take whatever the next steps are.
Gotcha.
We want to walk in as complete as possible.
Gotcha. Now, where do you find, because I'm a voice artist myself, and shameless plug, I do, you know, I've voiced hundreds of animations for like phone apps and things like that, just for, you know, kind of for my own like well-being. Like, where do you find the voice artists for that? Do you kind of already know people? Do you just go to an agent in Hollywood? Do you scour the internet looking for people like me? Like, kind of how do people get gigs as voice artists on an up and coming animation like that?
Well, With our show, it's a relatively in-house situation. Majority of the voices are done by the creators. So I'm actually doing a couple of voices, and I brought in some guys who I felt like were like-minded in terms of my sense of humor.
Right.
So I brought those guys in, and they're really good at doing voices and stuff like that. So I brought those guys in, but there are a couple of other people that I've met and my travels throughout life that are really good at voices. One of the guys who's doing a voice for me is Isaac Hayes III, who is the son, of course, Isaac Hayes, which is the voice of Chef on South Park.
Right.
And his son has a very, very deep voice. He does tons of voiceovers for commercials and stuff like that. Another guy is Jason Weaver, who played little Michael Jackson in the Jackson movie. He also was the singing voice of Simba in The Lion King, stuff like that. And then I also have Damian Wayans, who is Damon Wayans' son, who's going to be doing some voiceovers for us as well. So these are people that I just have relationships with who possess talents that I can use. So I reached out to them about it, and they were, you know, they're all on board.
Awesome. Those are some great things.
We are still looking, though. We are still looking, because we don't have every voice locked.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe you and I should hook up after the show and talk about this.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say this, because I don't want it to be about me, but if you go back and listen to this show when it's all said and done, I'll send you well, you actually have the link to your archive. I tagged you on Facebook.
Right.
But if you go back and listen to the show, through all the commercial breaks and the show's intro, basically every single voice you hear is me. And I do some Simpsons bits and stuff at the beginning. So, yeah, give it a listen, and if you like it, you know, we'll talk. So, anyway, but I know you're short on time. Thank you. But, yeah, since you are short on time, tell everybody real quick what they can expect on Read All About It Radio. Tell them what it's like, and then we'll do your lightning round and let you get out of here, because I know you got things to do.
Gotcha. Well, with Read All About It Radio, our show is completely uncensored and completely unfiltered. And, you know, a lot of people tend to think that they understand who we are because they know our families so well, and they have these opinions of who my sister and I are. And when they watch our show, they get to see the real us, which, you know, contains a lot of shock value, because we curse like sailors, we drink, and nothing's off limits. We prank each other, we crack jokes on each other, we crack jokes on everybody else. Nobody is exempt. And our show is kind of like Howard Stern meets The Breakfast Club. Because we have really good guests sometimes, because we have great relationships in the business throughout the years that we developed. So, what we do is we like to get those people a little bit tipsy and have them talk about whatever it is our subject of the day is. And then after they get a little bit tipsy and they open up, then we start hitting them with the questions so we get the truth.
Nice.
And that's what our show is like. We like our show to feel like a living room conversation, like the kind of conversation you would have when the game is on, when you're just with your friends having beers. We want our show to feel like that. We want it to be relaxed. So we get a different interview from people than they get other places.
Gotcha. Well, you know, as you know, we were talking off the air. I mean, I've watched / listened to the show several times, and I think that's a very accurate description. It is very laid back. It's all very casual. It's all just people having a lot of fun. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen Comic Book Men on AMC, where they're, you know, they have their episode, but at the end they're all just kind of podcasting and BSing back and forth with each other. It's very jovial and very lighthearted, just like that. So, yeah, it's a very enjoyable show.
Gotcha.
And yeah, speaking of the cursing and all that, back to your mom. I remember, like, I think it was the very first episode. didn't she call in and give your sister a hard time for cursing too much?
Yes. And she continues to do it. She monitors all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the whole nine. And whenever we do anything that she deems questionable, we all, my brother, my sister, and myself, we're all getting text messages, you know, telling us to calm down, you know, cool out, think about our family, you have to represent us well, and so on and so forth. But we are kind of like, we're our own people, we take care of ourselves, so no one can determine what we do in life except for us. So we'll just kind of do our own thing. Well, of course, we're respectful in dealing with it, but we kind of ignore it a little bit. She'd probably be mad if she heard me say that. But, but we, I mean, we listen when necessary. I'll say that.
Right. Well, I mean, your mom's a great lady. Like, I loved having her on this show, and I know she's a class act, so, you know, that's probably why she does that. But you're right. You know, like, everybody's mom, you know, admonishes them a little bit too much sometimes too. So I kind of see both sides of the equation. So anyway, but all right, Antonio, let's get to your lightning round here. I'm going to go ahead and hit the music for it. And what I need for you to do, I know you're in a little bit of back pain, but as best as you can, try and get into the mindset of one of those guys that's about to chop a karate board in half. That's how you need to be with the following 12 questions of the lightning round. All right.
Yes.
Here's the music. Now, see, you are very pumped up now after that Mortal Kombat music, correct?
Yes, very much so.
All right, here we go. The first one's going to be a softball, and I may or may not buzz you for incorrect answers or cheer you for correct ones. So here we go. Question number one, Soul Train or American Bandstand?
Soul Train. Soul Train all day long.
I have to give you the correct one. I remember I used to watch that as a little kid, and I remember my parents were like, "Why you watch Soul Train so much?" And, you know, this is back in the 70s and 80s when there's a lot of tight pants going around. So I used to love watching the booties dancing across my TV screen. So, all right, question number two: L.A. Dodgers or L.A. Lakers?
L.A. Lakers all day, hands down. Lakers. I'm a Laker fan.
All right. I'm going to give you just for Magic Johnson alone, I'm going to give you the cheer.
Exactly.
Question number three, if not now, when exactly is it hammer time?
It's always hammer time.
You are kicking ass, my friend. You're 3 for 3 so far. Nice work. All right.
Hilarious.
Question number four. Who are your favorite superheroes, male and female?
Of course, I like Superman. He can fly, he can see through things, and he's made of steel. So, Superman. Female, probably Catwoman. I like Catwoman. Probably because Halle Berry played her in the movie, and that was hot. So, and Eartha Kitt back in the day. Eartha Kitt was sexy back in the day. So I'll go with Catwoman.
All right. Very good choices, by the way. The number one answers are Batman and Wonder Woman, but I, for one, am shocked that Superman and Catwoman do not get a lot more, you know, answers than they do. So very, very good answers there. So, all right. Here's a quiz for you, and I'm throwing you under the bus if you get this one wrong. But number five, according to your mom, how many horses are in the sky?
Oh, Lord. I do not know. I'll guess a number. I'll say 1,000. I don't know.
Oh, my God. I did. Well, I purposely picked one of the more obscure songs from your mom. I'll give you a hint. It is less. It's a number less than 10.
A number less than 10.
Blank horses.
Oh, God. Wow. Horses in the sky. Horses in the sky. Crap. I don't know, man.
Now I feel
less than 10. I'll say 6.
You're close. 7. The song. Okay. The song title is Seven Horses in the Sky. I am sorry.
God, why don't I know that song title? I'm sorry. You stumped me.
Now she's really going to kill you. So you better not.
Exactly. Now I'm going to get it twice. Thanks a lot.
All right, question number six, Xbox or PlayStation?
I'm going to go Xbox. You can't really lose against Bill Gates, man.
Okay.
Microsoft.
All right, I'm a PlayStation guy, so I have to buzz you. But that's still, I mean.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I'm sorry. Let me change that. Family affiliation, Xbox, PlayStation. That's Sony. My father works for Sony. So, and we have a lot of Sony stuff. I got a lot of Sony goodies. So I'm changing that. PlayStation.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. There you go. Now it's good. All right. All right. So you are now out of six. You are 5 for 6 so far. All right. Question number 7. If we could enter an alternate universe where we could combine the Avril Lavigne songs My Happy Ending and Losing My Grip, would we then name that new song My Losing or Happy Ending Grip?
I'm going to go with Happy Ending Grip.
I think absolutely. Everybody loves a good gripped happy ending. Number 8, Betty or Veronica?
Say again?
From the Archie comics, Betty or Veronica?
Betty or Veronica? Betty or Veronica? I'm trying to. I think wasn't Veronica the pretty one?
Well, they were both attractive. Betty was the blonde good girl. Veronica was the raven-haired bad girl.
I'm gonna go Veronica. I'm gonna go with the raven-haired bad girl.
That is the only correct answer. So very good. That's one of those ones. That's kind of like Yankees or Mets. Like Yankees is always the wrong answer. Mets is always the right answer. So I should throw in for you because you're from Cincinnati, but you lived in the ATL. Just kind of a bonus question. Reds or Braves?
Oh, Reds. I'm going to go Reds, hometown. I'm not a big baseball fan, but when I did watch baseball, I watched the Reds, and they happened to win the World Series that year, and I paid attention. They beat the Oakland A's, and they swept them. So I'm going to go Reds.
Very good.
That is better.
Very good answer. Yeah, I actually have to cheer you for that one. That was the 1990 World Series.
Yep.
So I'm from Columbus, Ohio, so I'm, you know.
Oh, that's fellow Buckeye.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I'm a huge Reds fan. I'm, you know, Mets are my number one team, and I don't know why. But aside of that, you know, it's like I get the Indians and the Reds on TV, and if I have a choice between the two, I'll usually watch the Reds instead of the Indians, just because National League Baseball is so much better. But anyway, so that's awesome.
Sorry.
All right, number 9, let's play Family Feud. We surveyed 100 people, and the top 5 answers are on the board. According to women, what is the most important element in a relationship?
According to women, and we're talking top five answers?
Yeah. But we're looking for the number one answer, but yeah.
Number one answer, money.
No, surprisingly, the number one answer, that's a very good guess, but the number one answer was trust.
I mean, I figured that, but that was cliche. I figured that my answer should tell the truth instead of saying the politically correct answer.
Right. I think money was like number five, if I remember correctly, but trust was number one. I forget what number two was, but money was on there.
Of course, women are going to act like money's number five.
Right.
That's the game. I'm not after your money, honey. I just want you to love me.
Until 2 years later, then it's all about the money and screw trust. Exactly. All right. Question number 10. What would be the worst name for somebody who hates prepared meats? Salami or pepperoni?
Oh, God. I'm going to go with salami.
Yeah.
That sounds bad.
Yeah. They're both pretty bad, but yeah. Usually the correct answer is the second one. Pepperoni is pretty bad, but salami.
Yeah, pepperoni is bad, but salami sounds like, I would hate if somebody called me salami.
See, it's like reading it is one thing, but actually hearing you say the names out loud, yeah, I think you're right. So, all right, only 2 more questions. Question number 11, who, in your opinion, is the sexiest woman alive? And the correct answer is...
The sexiest woman alive. Wow. In my opinion, I'm going to go with... sexiest woman alive. That's a tough one. I'm going to just say Stacey Dash.
Okay.
Because she's been number one on my list for years.
Okay. All right. Now, see, that is one where there are no incorrect or correct answers. I will cheer you if somebody says Avril Lavigne, but, you know, that's there are no incorrect answers. So, all right. And number 12, the last question, what is the worst thing a guy can do on a first dinner date? A, ask for a doggy bag, B, order a root beer, or C, use a coupon? worst.
The
guy
of the coupon.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to give you a cheer for that one. So, I don't know, so far, nobody has said order a.
Hello.
There we go. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, almost everybody says use a coupon, but I'm surprised nobody has ever said order a root beer, because if I'm a girl on a date with a guy and he orders a root beer, I'm thinking this guy's a freaking moron, you know? Like,
he's a child, right?
Yeah, exactly, you know?
My second ID.
Well, I get that because there's a buddy of mine that anytime we ever went out to eat, like, he would, you know, we'd go to these nice restaurants, he would ask the waiter, do you have root beer? And I'd be like, dude, you are so freaking embarrassing me right now. Like, you have no idea. Yeah, so anyway, but. All right, Antonio, I know you got to get going, but please take the next minute, plug where people can find you on Facebook, where they can find you on Twitter, where they can watch Read All About It Radio. Plug whatever you want. The next minute or two is all yours, my friend.
Okay, well, all my social media is all the same. It's Antonio Reed Jr., AntonioReedJr. That's at Antonio Reed Jr., Facebook.com/AntonioReedJr., all that good stuff. You can catch my sister and myself on Read All About It Radio. We move from Thursday nights. We're going to be moving back to Fridays when we come back. And we'll be on SFMTV.com. And that'll be Friday nights, 8 o'clock. Other than that, that's about it. Oh, and please, everybody, go and pick up the new Michael Jackson album that is coming out on Epic Records that my brother was, he got the A&R on. So, and he's a big Michael Jackson fan. So it's coming. I don't know the exact release date. I don't think the label knows yet either, but it's coming very soon, right around the corner.
Awesome, awesome. Well, when you get information on that, send it my way, and, you know, we'll be sure and plug it for you. Or, you know, I was going to extend this invitation to you anyway. If you ever want to come back on the show to plug whatever, you know, you need 5 minutes because that's coming out or something else, your cartoon's ready to debut, let me know, and I'll find 5 minutes to squeeze you in somewhere. It's never a problem.
Okay, and one more thing I forgot to mention. I critique music regularly on a website called blazetrack.com, and it's basically a website where people search, seek out industry professionals to get to the next level. They either call to get advice, or they call for, or they send their music in to be reviewed for possibly an opportunity. You never know. You might inspire somebody to push a button of some sort. So blazetrack.com/AntonioReed. You can submit your music to me, and I give you an actual video response of what I think about your music.
Awesome. That sounds like an excellent service. Do you ever get, like, so many requests that you can't keep up on that, or is it not to that point yet?
Yeah, I definitely do, because my inboxes are full with everyone who believes that I am the gatekeeper to their future. So they treat me like I'm literally holding the keys. So I do get tons of stuff, and I just tell people, just send it to my Blazetrack. I don't work for a label, okay? So no one pays me to listen to everyone's music. So Blazetrack pays me to listen to music, so they got to go through Blazetrack.
Gotcha. All right, man. Well, that's all good stuff. And yeah, like I said, man, if you, we'll get you booked on here for a full interview maybe later on in the year. But in the meantime, if, like I said, if you got something you want to plug or talk about and you need 5 minutes, just let me know and we'll make it happen. All right. All right, man. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up with Antonio Reed Jr. And when we get back, we're going to have baseball expert Jeff Archer. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hey, player? Is you tired of blinging your gear, flashing your skrilla, and cruising around for dimes in your whip with no bass? Don't hate the player, my Nichols. Hate the game.
I'm loving how it's going in the Akron scene, cause I'm rolling with the dudes and they act as mean. Always come around here when they asking me, I cause catastrophes the way it has to be. This is Tony Sin, man, yeah, and this is Sound School. West on the beat, yo, it's like we bringing sound, dude. I ain't never slowing down, it's not allowed, dude. Haters in the dark trying to hide, but we're down.
So you wanna hear the bomb stuff? Sick of the videos. Middle finger up and stay rapping for my city, yo. Tune to the hip-hop stop, it's the bomb. Ain't you heard? SmartMarkRadio.com. So you wanna hear the bomb stuff? Sick of the videos. Middle finger up and stay rapping for my city, yo. Tune to the hip-hop stop, it's the bomb. Ain't you heard? SmartMarkRadio.com.
Wednesday nights at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, only on SmartMarkRadio.com. The following is a special Smart Asses Radio Sports Update. Welcome back to the 44th Annual Blind All-Stars Golf Tournament here at Royal Melbourne Golf Club. I'm Summer Patterall, and now let's go live to Nigel Barnsworth on the first hole as Stevie Wonder still tries to tee off.
Thank you, Summer. Stevie Wonder is already 77 strokes away. Make that 79, 82 strokes over par, and has yet to hit the ball. Swing miss, swing miss, swing miss, swing miss, swing miss. Well, there you have it. Stevie Wonder now 89 strokes over par, steps away from the tee acrimoniously, though he attempts to break the club over his knee, misses gratuitously, and trips over the ladies' tee. Let's go 4 yards up the fairway, shall we, to Jack Pot, who has the call, as Ray Charles hits at 274 strokes over par, and is still attempting to take his second shot.
To become a smartassaholic, check out our online magazine at smartasses.net for replays of our radio show's audio humor, pay-per-view predictions, the Smartasses Hot Chick of the Month, and official Smartasses paraphernalia, as well as entertainment articles, videos, celebrity news, free sarcastic e-cards, geek culture, and one of the four largest annual top 100 sexiest women lists in the world.
Always know I can count on you, mighty Hercules.
You only had one sandal, Jason, which means you were meant to be king of Ulysses. Why are you laughing?
Hercules! Oh, it's most amusing. Argo said he wanted to pass the time by having a drink while we sail on our quest to find the Golden Fleece. Hmm?
And what's so funny about that?
Well, it's comical, Hercules, because he got drunk on his own wine and passed out. So Castor and Pollux and myself put his hand in hot water so that he would pee himself. Then we all found writing utensils and drew on his face.
By the gods, listen now. Remember what I'm going to say. Never draw on the host.
But Hercules, I don't understand. I thought when someone passed out at their own party, they were considered fair game, hmm?
And who bought you that glass of wine you hold in your hand?
I'm sorry, mighty Hercules. You are right.
Well done, lad. Now you'll grow up to be fine and strong.
I just hope I'm as wise as you are one day, Hercules.
And you will be, my boy, because you have a strong will.
Thanks, Hercules. And right now, I'm going to do what Laertes said we should do all along. And that's blow pepper up his nose and glue a banana to his hand so maybe he won't notice that he pissed himself. See ya.
Bye then.
You know what they say, Hercules. Spare the rod, spoil the child.
He's 35. Looking for more smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com.
So, Ricky, how about that soundbite, man?
Oh, you're terrible. And your show is terrible. If it weren't for Geek Goddess Shacky, I'd have already downloaded it, put it on a floppy, just so I could wipe my ass with it.
Well, that's really...
Oh, what? You hear that noise? That's you. You just told a joke. And what's that? What's that? Is that applause? No. Oh, is that laughter? No, that's a pin dropping. Your audience hates you.
I hate you. That's not really...
You are not smart. You stupid asses. You should be called stupid asses. Well, you're leaving. Rude.
To interact with SmartS's Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the hosts at SmartS'sNet using the hashtag HailJackie.
Come to me no more, Moses. When are you going to bring me real proof of your God?
And when are you
going to let my people go? All that they ask is to sit at the foot of Mount Sinai, to warm their souls by the burning bush of God, and to listen to Smartass's Radio.
Smartass's Radio. To call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype.
Are you aware of what you make me feel, baby? Right now I feel invisible to you, like I'm not radio. Then you feel me lock my arms around you. Why'd you turn away? Here's what I have to say. I was left to cry.
And now, back to SmartS's Radio.
Well, he is an author and an editor who has written 6 books and over 900 articles with diverse subjects, including politics and most notably today, anyway, baseball. Jeff Archer, welcome to SmartS's Radio, my friend.
Hi, how's it going, Johnny?
It's going very well. So I get first question out of the gate, I got to ask you, and I know there's a story behind this. Tell us about Malcolm with only one L, LaGauche. Please tell us about this alter ego of yours that you got going.
Okay, in 1991, I was the editor of a newspaper, a weekly newspaper, mainstream, and the publishers were middle-aged apolitical women, and I said, let's start a commentary section here, and it was unheard of for a paper at that time. We did, but I wrote a lot of articles for the paper. And, you know, I covered events and stuff, so I didn't want to make it look like I wrote the whole paper, so I had to come up with another name. And I figured Malcolm is quite a dorky name in Britain, and LaGauche is the left, and my politics are at the left. So I just came up with Malcolm LaGauche, and I misspelled Malcolm, M-A-L-C-O-M, I put, and I've kept it to that day. So it's an alter ego, and I have fun with it, and most people know who it is, but once in a while, you know, somebody doesn't. I remember on Facebook, some person asked me, she lives in Belgium, and I said, oh, I played ball there, and I sent it to my Facebook page for my book, Strike Four Adventures in European Baseball. And she wrote back and said, the link didn't go through. I said, well, here it is. Then she wrote back and said, there's a guy who looks like you, but his name's Jeff Archer. I go, oh, she didn't even know. So I've kept that for my webpage, and everybody knows it's not meant to confuse anybody. It's not meant because I'm afraid to put my opinion out. It was just kind of a fun thing to have two names. And I say everybody should have two names. I think, you know, that would be a good thing if everybody had two names. We'd have a much more interesting country.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I guess that's where Johnny Video comes from. I mean, it's kind of a stage name.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
by the way, what video, what descent is that from? What, you know, what originally was that?
Oh,
European, African?
Video, I would have to say, would probably be Italian, so, since I'm Italian.
Okay.
That's how I would make that one work. So, anyway, so how did you get so deeply involved in baseball, especially to the point where, you know, you were fit to actually coach and manage and teach like you did? Like, you know, I mean, I don't know if you want to walk us back up to the time you were 5 years old or where you want to start, but I'm kind of curious as to how this all developed.
Well, I'd never seen a baseball game in my life, and I was in my yard playing one day. It was 1954. I have a very good memory, and I know why I can remember 54. And I ran in the house. My father's watching a baseball game. And there's Willie Mays on deck with, like, three bats in his hand. You know, those days didn't have batting donuts. You had two or three to warm up in the on-deck circle. And I said, what's this? He said, a baseball game. And I looked and I said, that looks pretty good, but you know, I don't want to do that. I can't hold three bats. I remember that vividly. And I went out and played again. But that was the World Series, of course. The New York Giants play in Cleveland, and the Giants swept the series, and Mays made that phenomenal catch. So I started playing, and I just, you know, I was obsessed with it. Played Little League, played Babe Ruth League. I had a good measure of success, broke a lot of records in both, led them in home runs, you know, my last year pitching. Continued my career. I had a car accident in 1968 that stopped my pitching career. I was on my way to the best amateur league in New England, but I still played positions, and I just went from there. Got involved with fast pitch softball for 4 years, managed two state championship teams. I was the youngest manager ever to win a state fast pitch softball championship. Went to England on my honeymoon in 1973. Saw an ad in an entertainment magazine for baseball players. I mean, I'm on my honeymoon now, right? And, my wife had been with me 4 years prior to that, so, you know, she put up with me and was always in the stands and kept all the clippings. So I said, let's go watch your game. Well, I ended up playing in that game. And I hadn't pitched a game in 6 years, but my leg had recovered, and I did pretty good. I pitched a two-hitter, won it 2-1, went 2-for-4 at the plate. I've had pictures of that on Facebook. And I played 3 or 4 games on my honeymoon. A team signed me. Moved back to England in 1975. Signed as a player manager for a team called the Crawley Giants. The following year, I was voted president of the Southern Baseball League. I went out and recruited 4 new teams, put my own team in. We won the title. Then that year, I started the first night baseball league in the history of Great Britain. And it was in a London rugby park called Rosslyn Park. And it just went from there. And I started promoting the sport. I had never done any of this stuff in my life, and it was like wide open to me. And one thing about the Brits, they're not quite as uptight as Americans. And I was allowed to do anything I wanted. I did some pretty wacky stuff. I did a lot of astute stuff. In 1979, I started an adult baseball league, and the umpires were 13 to 15-year-old kids, and a 13-year-old girl was umpire-in-chief. Nobody's ever done that. I just I just kept going, and I eventually wanted to manage in the Netherlands, and in 1980, I took my team, the London Ducks, to Europe. We had a tour, and on the way back, just stopped it and watched a game in the Netherlands, and saw a guy from my Newport, Rhode Island days there. Talked to him, and he said his team was looking for a manager the following year. So I went, signed a contract, moved to Holland, and managed there for 2 years. So I have a comprehensive... I was addicted to the sport. You know, a friend of mine in Holland said, you know, it's like opium, he said. You know, you get addicted. After my last game in Holland, though, I lost the addiction. I came back, I thought I would be, you know, every year I always was planning in the winter, what am I going to do next year? And for the first time since 8 years old, I didn't have that. And I was quite surprised that I didn't have too many withdrawal symptoms. And today, I'm a cynic. I don't like Major League Baseball. I don't like what it's turned into, but I still love the sport. And so, you know, that's it in like 2 or 3 minutes, my background of baseball. So I played, managed, and promoted, in several different countries. So
when you were going back and forth across the pond, were you still married and your wife was coming along with you, or?
Well, I lived in Europe for 8 years.
Right, but then you came back to Rhode Island.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, she's with me, and next week we'll be celebrating our 41st wedding anniversary. So,
I'll be damned.
She put up with me. You know, she didn't agree with a lot of the stuff I did, but she always supported it. So,
right.
Without that, I couldn't. I wouldn't have had the luxury of what I did in my life, you know, without that support. I definitely wouldn't have.
Right. Now, let me ask you, too, because you talk about, you know, because most Americans with a very singular perspective think that the Brits are a lot more uptight than we are with the, you know, drink tea and puff puff and, you know, the stuffy attitude. But it really is the opposite. And, I mean, you can kind of break it down, and you're into politics and all that. If you really break down a lot of American laws, the United States really has a stick up their ass compared to Europe. And so I've said that for years, and it's really refreshing to hear you say that.
Oh, by all means. And, you know, once you get... You know, you have the culture shock going to Britain. It took about a year to get over. I was starting to understand British terminology. You know, I understood that one finger meant nothing over there, but two fingers meant the same as one finger here. So you get used to all of that stuff. But I'll tell you, I love the Brits. Like I said, I did some stuff. Maybe I wouldn't get arrested in the U.S. for doing it, but I would have been ostracized. And I was accepted over there. I was accepted as this, you know, maybe because I was a foreigner too. And the Brits probably held themselves to a different social standard than they held me. And I just did, like I said, it was wide open. And I was involved with basketball there as well. So, I would say that's one of the biggest stereotypes, wrong stereotypes of all time, that the Brits are this reserved people. And, I mean, some stories, and probably couldn't even tell them on the air. I can tell you all sorts of stuff about the Brits and how they, you know, how they react to different things in life. So, have you ever been to Britain?
No, I haven't, but it's just like, you know, just, I don't know. The first one that probably comes to mind is like, you know, the drinking age. I know over here,
yeah,
it's 21 now, and in a lot of places in Europe, it's like 16. And Canada's, I think, 18, which probably makes the most sense. But, yeah, just...
Well, your observations were absolutely correct. And I don't know what the age was over there, but they have a drink called Shandy. And it's a mixture of a soft drink, like soda and beer. And 14-year-old kids drink it. And my first junior league that I started in 1978, I went over and created an organization in London, Y, got 2,000 kids playing baseball, set up leagues. So my first home junior league, we had one team with all American kids from the local U.S. Air Force base. And I'm umpiring a game, and manager calls timeout and comes running over to me. He says, "Those kids in the other dugout are drinking beer." And I said, "Yeah, so what?" You know, and you can see the cultural difference there. And he scratched his head, and I said, "Just go manage your team, no problem. If they get drunk and rowdy, I'm going to say something." And it was another one, and I, you know, I'll refrain from using the F word, but I will, you know, I'll put another one in there. But we had a championship game that year with the inter regional area. And I heard there was a tremendous umpire that just came into town for the U.S. Navy London. He was a commander. I called him up and asked him if he'd like to help. He said, "Sure." So he was excellent. The game started. By the third inning, a ground ball was hit to the second baseman. And so it took a bad hop, and it got him right between the legs. Oh, and he grabbed it, and he groaned. But on the way down, he threw the runner route, you know, before he keeled over on the ground. And he's over there in pain. And Humphrey's eyes says, "Where'd he get you, sonny?" He says, "Right in the effing nuts." So, yeah, calls me aside, an American guy, right? "Did you hear what that boy said to me?" I said, "Yeah." "What's the big deal?" He said, "Well, you heard that." I said, "You asked him where it hit him, and he told you where it hit him. What is the big deal?" And I said, you know, he comes from a working class background. I said, you know, and his parents, you know, use words that maybe you wouldn't use, and it's a cultural difference. Now, he finished the game, and he just never called me back. He didn't want to umpire, you know. So, and I got all sorts of stories with the Americans over there, you know, were just weird. And there's a standing joke in Germany. How can you tell the American in a spa, the one with the clothes on? So, you know, that says it all. So your observations were very, very, very accurate.
Gotcha. Is Holland even more relaxed than the UK? Because that's something I kind of guessed as well. Or
in a different way it is. And you know, there are things that are just accepted there that, you know, they don't even question. You know, and that was a culture shock going to Holland. I thought, well, it'd be just a different language, and I learned it. And I after my first year, I spoke only in Dutch. And wow. Not only did that impress them, but you can learn a lot more, even though they all spoke English, you know, in that. And there's a lot of inbred tolerance. I guess it comes from, you know, centuries ago when they accepted people like Spinoza and that were going to get killed in their own countries for blasphemy and things like that. And they allowed the French Protestants, the Huguenots, to go there, you know, when they were going to get, you know, beheaded in France and stuff. So it's just a tradition with them. And it's funny because at the time, that was the early 80s, you know, everybody smoked weed. The cops on duty would be standing on the street corner smoking a joint. And I'd go by and say, hey, Blue, how's it going? And I never touched this stuff. In the 60s, you know, right in the middle of the 60s, I just played sports. And I didn't have anything against it. I never used it in my life. And in Holland, when I didn't. Then when I turned 40, you know, I had some. I was an insomniac, and it worked. And I do occasionally imbibe today. So, but when I was in societies where it was commonly used, I never touched it. But no, it's just, and they don't talk about it. They just do it. You know, as far as their society. And and that freaks American players out too. You know, when they go over there and they realize what the Dutch are really about. It just, you know. They go, wow, we couldn't do this stuff in the U.S. Or, you know, maybe they could do it, but they wouldn't be accepted. And I said, yeah, well, they're like the Brits in that. If you're different from them, they don't care. For instance, right. in the Netherlands, somebody say in the 60s, right, so they, you know, they'd be dressed in a suit and be very conservative, you know, in their mannerisms and stuff. I don't mean politically. And they got along with the teenagers and people in their 20s. There was no generation gap. And both accepted each other, even though they may have liked different music and dressed differently and had different styles. And it was amazing to see. A good friend of mine, Nico van Heemskerk, was a baseball coach. He was 60. So he'd hang around at nighttime in the bars over there. And you could go to a bar over there. I don't drink alcohol, but you could have a coffee or a soda. It was no big deal. He'd hang around with some of his players, 21, 22 years old. And if in the U.S. you saw somebody like that, there'd be all sorts of questions asked, you know, and where in the Netherlands, it's just totally, yes, my biggest culture shock moving back here in 1982. I literally thought I was going back in time 40 years, and I mean, I was shocked at some of the words I was hearing coming out of people's mouths, you know, things like niggers and queers. I hadn't heard this stuff, and I said, what is going on? I'm still after, let's see, I've been back in 1982, 32 years, I'm still having a hard time adjusting.
Yeah, it just amazes me, you know, just even through social media, like you can kind of get a feel of what people are bitching about, and it's exactly what you're saying, like, the stuff that's, like, so shocking to people here is, like, so normal over there, like you said, it's not even talked about, you know? This is the
possible. You notice how they denigrate. They denigrated in this country. Oh, we don't want to be like them. You know, I mean, we have a tendency not to take any foreign ideas, which, you know, ideas are universal. Some are good, some are bad. Some people actually do things better than Americans. Sometimes Americans do things better than other people. The U.S. citizens, I use that term because American is anybody in the hemisphere. A Canadian calls himself an American or a Brazilian. So, again, we've cornered the market on that word. But it's like, you know, why are you considering, you know, saying, you know, like there's a road system in Holland. In 1980, when I moved there, I had a Dutch guy in the car, and there's a red light, and I start putting my brakes on. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm stopping. He said, why? I said, the light's red. He said, it won't be. And sure as hell, I got there. The light was green. In 1980, all the lights in the country were already timed. If nobody's coming the other way, it'd make it green for you. We still haven't got to that point here yet in this country. So we could learn, but there's a tendency not to open, you know, to the rest of the world. Now, they're just the opposite. The Brits and Dutch used to say to me, if they had part of their society, and the French, or red tape, they said, look, we realize we're not good at this, but we're working at it, you know, and I've never heard, you know, U.S. people talk that way. We do we're the best in everything, so.
Right.
You know, the term for that is ethnocentrism, but when I use that, most people don't know how to spell it in this country, so it's hard to even use that word.
Right. I get you on the traffic lights, though, because I'm often out late at night, and my God, how many times I've sat for three or more minutes at an intersection that's busy during the day, And they don't even have a traffic detector there for people at night. Like, so you literally sit there the entire 3.5 minutes trying to trip the traffic detector that's not even there. So that's
I live in a city of 40,000 people right at the border of San Diego, and I timed it one time from one end to the other. It's about 3 miles, and I sat at red lights for 5.5 minutes. And I figured the waste of gasoline in that time, the nerve-wracking waiting, multiply that times tens of thousands of cars every day in this city of La Mesa. And I said, well, I would never run for political office, but if I ever ran for mayor of La Mesa, I would run on one platform, you know, one item on the agenda, just that, timing the lights. You would save the city millions of dollars a year. And but again, I think that's too obscure for people to understand the concept.
Right, right. Well, just to kind of steer it back to baseball a little bit, do you think had your experiences with the game not been in Europe, do you think you would have developed the equal amount of passion that you have for it now? Because you really had some very unique and wonderful experiences being in a country that it's not the number one sport of the nation. And I'm thinking that added a level of fun to it for you that you wouldn't have had you done it domestically. Do you think there's any truth to that?
No, I would have. I mean, I was obsessed. I mean, before I moved to Europe, there's not a year that went by I didn't coach in a league or manage. After I got out of the Babe Ruth League at 16, I was managing in the Babe Ruth League for the next 5 years. I had a fast-pitch softball team, one of the best leagues on the East Coast, for 4 years. Then I went back to managing in the oldest amateur league in the world, the Sunset League in Newport, Rhode Island. There was college players and former minor league players. So my passion was there. It just got, when I went to Europe, it just changed the way it looked. It changed the way that I approached the game. And I became more of an innovator over there than a participant. In the U.S., if I had stayed here, I would have stayed in the league. I was for a few years managing there and tried to win a championship or two. You know, it just took on a whole different form. And the European, like I say, adventure, it just opened my mind to a lot of different ways of doing things where, I was always eccentric. I mean, at age 19, I was the first person ever to wear it. Providence Journal wrote it up, colored baseball shoes. I looked at him and I said, why does everybody have black baseball shoes? So I went to a store and bought some orange leather dye and dyed them orange. Nobody else ever did anything. I just did it because, hey, let's give this a shot. It sounds pretty good. But after 2 weeks, the leather kept cracking, so that was a pain in the ass, you know, keeping them that way. I always had to do something different, and I think that was in me, and it transcended baseball or anything, the way I do things in life.
I think you and I are similar. I used to wear, I'm not sure what they're called, but in the Middle East, the sheiks, those things they wear in their heads, I used to wear one of those when playing softball. So I think you and I have a similar flair for the oddball there. But speaking of the orange shoes, those were probably loved pretty well in Holland, right? I'm sure the Dutch love seeing anything orange.
Well, yeah, okay, it's the national color, of course.
Yeah.
Well, in 1971, I took to the field one night with my team with French berets in front of 1,000 people. President of the league came running out and said, why are you trying to embarrass me? I said, no. He said, calm down. So they voted and said it was not a baseball cap because it didn't have a visor on it. And I looked at the rule book, and it says every team must have an identical cap, shirt, socks, and pants. And I said, doesn't use the word visor. So I appealed it to the regional ASA, Amateur Softball Association. They upheld the rule that it was illegal. Then finally get to the Nationals, and Tom Porter reversed it. So I went back after the season. It was too late. I said, there you go. And I threw the thing on the table. I said, like, that was going to beat your team. So they were kind of, you know, well, yeah, we screwed up. And the press kept calling me all winter. What are you going to wear for hats next year? I told one reporter, sailor hats. Told another reporter, jester hats. Another one, I said, beanies, you know. They were writing this stuff in the newspapers. I'm 22 years old, you know, just coming up with this stuff. Opening day, they're all there, and they got their pads, and all of a sudden we came out with plain baseball hats. So, I don't know. To me, sports, the ideal thing is you go out and play your best, and you play hard. But secondly, it's also art.
Right.
And I looked at the baseball field, to me, as as my palette and my easel, you know, while I was playing ball. Now, I've seen some clowns out there, and it takes away from their the playing ability, you know, then it's for the wrong reason. But if you can go out there, I mean, look at some of the colorful people we've had in the past. Casey Stengel, Bill Lee, all of these people, you know. Jimmy Pearsall, they enhance the game. They're not allowed to do that stuff today. Bill Lee in the 19th, Spaceman Lee in the 1970s, they asked him what he thought about artificial grass. Remember for a while they were making all the stadiums with artificial grass? He said, I don't know. I never smoked it. Now, if a major league player like that today, he'd be suspended probably for a season for making a public statement like that. That's what I have against the game today. It's become so outrageously conformist and politically correct, and a statement for patriotism at the same time. You know, right. I just don't think that has a place in sports. So,
well, I know you were talking about the fans using noisemakers as kind of like something that's in that vein. I wanted to ask you, what about, because I know there's, well, I don't know if they still do, and I don't know if it was two, but I know for sure that the Miami Marlins had cheerleaders for a while. What's your take on that? Because I don't know. Like, although I applaud their innovativeness, at the same time, cheerleaders in baseball, I think that's maybe going a little bit overboard.
I kind of agree with you. I don't think it's overboard, but it's an exploitation of a very commercial aspect. You know, somebody, you know, getting an old car battery and hooking it up to a horn or something, at least there's a little innovation there, you know, a little creativity. So I may go along with you with the cheerleader thing. That kind of, you know, it takes away from rather than enhancing the game. So I don't agree that everything, you know, should happen. But when it happened in the last World Baseball Championship here, and it was held in the United States at different venues, oh, the fans went crazy. This is not baseball. The press did. And Joe Torre came out, and I give him a lot of credit. See, he's been around the world and seen baseball in other countries. And he said, of course this is baseball. He said, I'd like to see more of it. And now in the Netherlands, my first team I coached, we had a team. Here's how they look at things over there. On the third base side, we had 50 fans who made all the noise in the world. They had trumpets. They had drums. On the first base side, we had another group of about 50 doing the same things. They followed us all over the country. And one day I asked the club treasurer, I said, why don't they get together? Wow, we'd have 100 people in one place. He said, no, that's impossible. I said, why? He said, the ones you see on the third base side are the Christian Democrats. The ones you see on the first base side are the revolutionary communists. So he said they don't talk to each other, but they all rooted for the same club. So, you know, again, it's a game over there, too, more for the people, everybody. We're here. It started out as a working-class game, and it's an elitist game today. I was reading an article the other day. It's obligatory for a kid to have an $80-an-hour coach. When's the last time you saw kids, I don't know how old you are, on a field with overrun by weeds playing with a tape baseball? I haven't seen that in decades, but I grew up that way. They have to have the finest manicured fields to play on and the best equipment. We went out there with broken baseball bats. You put a nail in it and some Elmer's glue all and put some tape around it. And you had an old baseball, the leather came off, you taped it up, you went out there and played ball. That's how you learn your skills, by the way, by going out for playing for hours like that. But it's been like formalized, you know. Yeah, well, we need a good field to play on. We can't go out. There's too many weeds, you know. And I just that's one of the reasons I'm not thrilled with the way the game has gone today.
Right. Well, I think if you go into the inner city, you still see some of that. Or I know, like, I've seen videos of, you know, the Dominican Republic and stuff. You'll still see little sects where it's you know, they have one bat that everybody's sharing, and second base is an old hubcap and, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah,
that's in the Dominican Republic. It's not in the U.S. Cuba, the same thing. I wrote an article about this years ago in the first World Baseball Classic, and that was a spoof called The Commies Are Coming. Then I extended, and I went to one called Desire. And when I looked at Cuba, and I was trying to get some graphics for this, I saw kids playing with a broomstick on the streets with a piece of plastic all rolled up, and they were throwing it at each other, you know, and trying to hit it, and on the beach hitting rocks. And that brought me back to my childhood. So they're doing it in other countries, but here we've gone beyond that. And another thing that I didn't realize, again, because of my age, but why the demographics of sports have changed. And I got a hold of a guy, I hadn't talked to him in 40 years. He ran a YMCA in Barrington, Rhode Island. And he told me, today kids play one sport. Now, he was the head of that for years. And he said, kid would come in and sign up for summer program. He'd play baseball, he'd play volleyball, he'd swim, and play soccer. Today they come in, kid joins up for soccer, and that's it. Baseball, and that's it. So you're not seeing the cross-playing of these sports. So The theory is you play one, you're going to get better skilled, but if you play them all, your overall body gets more skilled as far as hand-eye coordination, speed, stopping, and starting, and these things. So this is something I've been out of the loop, and I'm starting to look into now. Kids are only playing one sport today.
Boy, I just remember back to my childhood, I don't know that I could have lived in that world. It's just, you know, you played baseball in the summer, you played football in the winter. I mean, those are the only two I did, and then later on in high school, I kind of got into basketball a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a kid, man, it was football or baseball. That's it. But
well,
I couldn't.
It was baseball and basketball where I was from in southern New England, and it was beautiful the way the seasons overlapped. The last baseball game of the season, you know, it was like 2 weeks later, you would start the first tryouts and practice for your junior basketball leagues. Then you play all winter in them. And later, eventually, I was in five leagues at one time when I was 16 or 17 years old, either as a coach or a player at one time, sometimes three games on a Saturday. But, again, at the end of the basketball season, it's winter. You go and you play, you know, in blizzards and stuff like that. At the end, the weather started changing a little bit. After your last basketball game, your last invitational tournament, the next day you're out there with your glove. It just got warm enough that you could start playing again. So, yeah, the overlap was perfect timing. There was no downtime. It was perfect, yeah.
Right.
Now, where did you grow up? In New York?
No. I grew up in Ohio. I grew up in the Akron, Cleveland area. And then,
oh, okay.
You know, yeah.
See, we didn't have organized football for kids where I was in those days. No Pop Warner or anything like that. And plus, I never had an affinity for the sports. I watched it on TV, tried to like it, but you know, just never did anything for me. But Ohio, they're kind of football fanatics out there, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much. I think probably the two biggest states for that would probably be Ohio and Texas, just off the top of my head. You know, Florida or California might make an argument, but we had organized football. I never played the organized though because I wasn't allowed. This was my mom's logic, and God bless her. You know, she was trying to do the right thing, but you know, she's seen too many people get injured in the organized sport. But sure, you can go ahead and play in the backyard without any helmets, pads, or protection at all.
Yeah.
You know, so. But, you know, I get the thinking that obviously in the organized sport, people are going to take it a lot more seriously. So I get both sides of the argument. But, all my football experiences were backyard. I believe I tried out for basketball in eighth grade and didn't make it. But I didn't even know how to dribble the ball at that point. Like, I literally had zero knowledge of basketball at that point in my life. And then, come, like, 10th grade, I learned it in probably a matter of about a month, the basics enough to where I was pretty good, and then by the time I got to around age 20, I would say, I got to a point where I was like borderline great, and probably could have made like a very small college team, you know, that kind of thing.
How tall are you?
Well, you know, that's part of it too. I was only 5'11", I think, at my peak.
That's what I am, and my game. I got to the point where I was playing against top college players. It turned from 16 or 17, the leagues I was playing, and averaging 15, 16 points a game, until 5 years later, averaging 7 assists and 6 points a game. So you had game changes, and mine turned into a passing game. I played informal football just like you, but maybe your mother was right. As today, I read a statistic. This is horrendous. The average Pop Warner player, 9, 10 years old, takes 109 hits to the head a year that could cause a concussion. That's 109. So multiply that times 5 years, and the brain until the age of 21 is still growing. And we're just starting to see now the, you know, the tip of the iceberg on football injuries. We're going to start seeing people who didn't make the pros, but you know, play Pop Warner ball, high school ball, stop football, get married, have a family, and age 30 can't remember where the house is. That's what we're going to start seeing. That to me is more dangerous than if a pro, you know, doesn't know where he is at age 40 after he's retired.
Right, and you're right. In the backyard game, you're not getting those headshots because nobody's wearing the helmet to give them the confidence to hit you with their head. So, yeah, that's So, but anyway, we're quickly running out of time. I know you want to talk about the knuckleball for a little bit. I give you one question about it. I was going to ask you what happened to R.A. Dickey last year, but I kind of know the answer. But one question, why are there not more knuckleballers? Is it because the pitch is that hard to master? Is it a matter of it requires a lot more finger stamina? Like, what do you think the single reason for that is?
There's only one reason. Baseball coaches and managers don't understand it and don't want to understand it. And I went through this when I taught it in the Netherlands in 1981 to a pitcher, a 20-year-old pitcher who had a great slider, good fastball, but was like a 500 pitcher. Taught him the knuckleball. Holland won the European Championship first time in 15 years, and it was nationally televised, and he won the final game, and they asked him, you know, on TV, why are you all of a sudden having this career year at age 20 and you didn't before? And he said two words, the knuckleball. Now, the following year, I managed another team. He didn't throw a knuckleball. And I asked him why. He said, well, my manager told me not to, because if it doesn't break, you'll get hit hard. Oh, my word. That is so feeble. If a curveball doesn't break, it's called a hanging curve. People hit it out of the park. They don't tell you not to throw a curveball. If a slider doesn't break. So they don't understand it. And I've spoken to many coaches, and they don't want to know about it. They don't understand it. So that's the biggest thing holding back. If we had time, I'd give you a couple of instances where kids who hung in there and found coaches that didn't become very successful. But that's the answer to your question. It's not understood by people in baseball. And first of all, most batters hate to hit it. So when they end up being coaches and managers, they don't even want to think about it. And Dick Allen in the 70s, they asked him, he was a great power hitter, and they said, How do you hit a knuckleball? He said, I go up. He says, I take my three swings and go sit down on the bench. He said, if I had to concentrate and change my stance and my swing to accommodate the knuckleball, he said, I'd never play baseball again because he would have to accommodate it. So you can't. Now, with Dickie or any knuckleball pitcher, you have a bad day. If the wind is blowing in, most pitchers like that because it keeps, you know, balls in the ballpark that may be home runs normally. But a knuckleball pitcher has a tendency, the wind going over the ball, to flatten it out and stops a vacuum behind it. If a wind's blowing out, the knuckleball is enhanced. So there are things that you cannot control, basically, where the wind's coming from. You know, so, it is a risk or reward pitch. There's no doubt. More so than others, but the lack of understanding. Then when you see a Wakefield have a good year or a Dickey, everybody's amazed. I'm not amazed. I'm amazed there's not more people throwing it.
Right. Right. Well, you know, for whatever it's worth, I've got it's, you know, ancient now by today's standards, but I've got the 2005 version of Major League Baseball for my Sony PlayStation 2, okay? And when I am playing that game, the one pitcher that I hate to face the most is Phil Niekro. Because they've got some legends in there. And honest to God, even on a video game level, Phil Niekro is almost impossible to hit in that game.
I'm not familiar with video games, but he was fabulous. Look at all the knuckleball pitchers. When did they retire? 48. Niekro's 48. Wilhelm was 49. Wakefield was 46. So it adds lots of their career. Some of them now started out as knuckleballers. Some didn't. And then incorporated it, and like Wakefield's always said, it gives a guy who doesn't have major league ability to be a normal pitcher to have a shot at the majors. He was at first base and never pitched a game in his life. Did you know that? In 1991, he was warming up on the sidelines, and the coach said, what's that? And they were going to cut him. He was a single-A team, and they threw him down to triple-A, and he came and was 8-1 in the first year in the majors. He didn't even know how to hold a base runner. So it's a very, very effective pitch, and I'm sold on it. I'm a fanatic about it. I've helped a lot of people. Online, I've written articles. I get a lot of inquiries. I have a little brochure I've made up about it, you know, with how to grip it, how to throw it, and the dynamics behind it. It's all physics. Any pitch in baseball is all physics. It's quite simple if you explain the physics to a pitch and why it does what it does.
Right. Well, yeah, I think the last one I remember aside of Dickey and Wakefield would be Tom Candiotti, I think, was the last one, wasn't he?
Yeah. He used it, I think, as part of his repertoire. I don't think he used it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think he used it like 95% of the time like these guys do.
Yeah, so maybe
there was
not
a difference if somebody used it. Now, I taught this kid in Holland how to use it as a third pitch. He didn't have a good third pitch. So I taught him, and he picked it up quickly. So it's something to be a different speed. He was so confident in it, he started using it in his pitching repertoire. So there's a difference of it using as a partial pitch, you know, in your repertoire, or relying almost all on the knuckleball. And you'll see them. I mean, you, and there's no way I don't care who it is. No knuckleball pitcher can say, you know, you can consistently throw it all the time. You throw two or three great games, and the next game you hit three home runs in the first inning off you, you know. So,
right.
And I'll tell you a quick story about this. It's funny. You've heard of Hoyt Wilhelm, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he was the man. Now, I had this fellow in Holland that I knew, and he played in Newport, Rhode Island. He went to Eckerd College. And in the spring training, the Yankees used to call up the coach and say, you got a half a dozen guys that can come over here and help out, you know, with the guys like shag fly balls, things like this, you know, pick up equipment. And it was a good thing for the kids. It gave them, they were around major leaguers, and they did a lot of the shit work for these guys. So one day he said, this old man, tall guy, comes over and says, you want to play catch? And he won't loosen me up. And he says, sure. And when you play catch with somebody, you don't want him throwing knuckleballs. So he said, this guy starts throwing knuckleballs. And he goes, what the hell's this jerk doing? And he's thinking to himself, he said, who the hell does he think he is? Hoyt Wilhelm? So about 10 minutes later, the guy said, thanks a lot, I'm done. Went up and shook his hand and said, hi, I'm Hoyt Wilhelm. So it was Hoyt Wilhelm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's a great story, that one right there.
Wow. Wow, I actually have a very similar story, but it's not related, so I'm going to save it for another time. But I will say this about the knuckleball. I actually used to throw it on the sidelines too, and I got to a point, I don't know how I would have done as a pitcher, but just playing catch, warming up for the games, I got to a point where I would say probably 6 or 7 out of 10 times I could get the knuckleball to wobble the way it was supposed to. Now, could I get it to land where I wanted it to? Probably not.
Yeah.
Were there the other three times where it was just an absolutely flat pitch with no spin? Yes. But I enjoyed throwing it, and in fact, I got to the point where I started throwing it as a softball pitcher and could get it to wobble, too. So that's why I can have a love.
Fast pitch?
No. Slow pitch. I could do an underhanded knuckleball.
Well, I've seen people do it. It's not going to fool anybody. In fast pitcher, you'll see a guy do it as a changeup. But, no, you're right. 7 out of 10. And the other three, if you're lucky, you know, they're not going to be expecting it not to do anything, and you may get away with it. So that's a good percentage. Now,
right.
When you said wobble, did it also not spin? Did it have less than one rotation?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good knuckleball. Anything over one rotation, the laws of physics, again, make it straighten out. So, you did well with that. Did you play in a league that and throw it at all, or?
No, I wish I had. It was just something that, you know, I did just kind of play and catch and stuff like that. And
how did you find out how to grip the ball? That's the first thing, with your fingertips. Most people don't. And how did you find out how to put it against the palm of your hand or rather than extend it in your fingers?
I actually did not do the palm of my hand trick, which I learned from reading your stuff.
Okay.
All I did was I gripped it like on my fingernails, you know, that part of the knuckle. And I just simply pushed it out as I threw it. But for me...
You had the basics down, except if you had put it against the palm of your hand, you would have created a much more vacuum behind it, which would have made it even break more.
Right. So
that's the whole
thing
about you.
I kind of wish I could go back in time and try it again now that I know these new tricks with it, you know. But no,
Don't we all? I learned it at 31 years old, and my playing days are way behind me. And I tried as a kid to throw it and never could, and I read the instruction manuals, but they were so feeble. Now you know how I learned how to throw it? Reading Jim Boughton's book, Ball 4. He went into detail how to throw it. And I said, wait a minute, that's not an instruction book, but he taught me. And
right.
So I was in England, and it's funny, I got nobody wants to catch you if you're trying to learn a knuckleball. I asked a couple American guys, they laughed at me. I said, sure, get out of here. I asked a 16-year-old girl who was a catcher in our league. She was about 5'10". And I said, would you like to help me develop a new pitch? Oh, sure. And I told her, I said, you may not like it. I'm going to give you times to beg out. And she didn't. The 3 weeks it took me, I was throwing stuff in the dirt over her head. Nothing was breaking. And finally I started breaking, and she didn't have a part of her body that wasn't bruised up. And when it was done, if it wasn't for her, I would have never learned a knuckleball. And then from then on, I got, you know, consistent enough to be able to teach it to people.
Right.
And every day, some days I go out there, and it wouldn't break as well, but I use 3 fingers instead of 2 temporarily and get it back. So there's all sorts of ways, if you're not having a good day, to try different things. Arm angle, things like that. You can drop down a couple of degrees and mess with it. So it's a complicated pitch, and it's easy, both at the same time.
Right.
But no, you sound like you got the concept down pretty good. And,
I think I read instructions on it. I want to say like in the sports section of the paper or maybe like a baseball magazine or something. And,
yeah.
And I'm thinking at the time that it would have had to have been like Charlie Huff or Candiotti or maybe Negro that kind of instructed on how to throw it. But that's where I learned. I'm like, oh, okay, you just kind of flick it with your fingers.
Yeah,
and so
yeah, you push it out with your fingers.
Right.
Now, last year at age 65, I hadn't touched the ball in 30 years. And I said, I'm going to put his knuckleball demonstration on it. It was at the Ted Williams baseball field in San Diego. I got a catcher there real early just in case I couldn't do it. And when the people showed up, I'll say, I can't do it. So I have 65 years old. First two pitches I threw him landed 8 feet in front of him. Then I started at least reaching him. When in 10 minutes, I was threw a couple of curveballs, and I was actually throwing a knuckleball again. I drew the demonstration on 16 pitches, 15 had less than one rotation. So to me, it's a pitch for life. It really is. And I can still go out and loosen up the old body stiff and aches. Had a lot of sports injuries, but I can still go out and throw one tomorrow.
Right. So, yeah, for me, there were two goals. One was to, like, not get any spin. And then once I got that, it was like, okay, now can I get it to wobble? And so... Yeah, like I said, 7 out of 10 times, I could at least get the no spin part. But
it's fun, isn't it? You throw it, and it's like somebody else is controlling it, like you get an electronic device controlling it. First one I threw, it's like I'm watching. Wow, I'm looking at that thing go here and there, and so it's a lot of fun. Even if you never threw it in a game, it's fun using it too.
Yeah, it came down to finger stamina for me. Like just after three or four of them, like my hand was already too sore to. Successfully, but anyway. All right.
Then you get obsessed with your fingernail length and stuff like that. You walk around with an emery board in your pocket all the time. I mean, that's when you get it's all feel. It's all feel, too. Once you get the proper feel, then you're 90% of the way there.
That's what Dickie was doing. I think I told you about that movie a couple months ago, the movie Knuckleball, the 2012 documentary film. Yeah, Dickie was walking around with a fingernail file all the time, too. So that was a great movie, by the way. Did you ever go and watch it?
I've seen parts of it. In London, I used to walk around with an emery board with a baseball cap. In those days, people didn't wear them. And I'd walk down the street with a baseball, and I'd be flicking it out with my fingers but not throwing it and listening to the ball, and if you hear a click, that means that actually left your hand and created the vacuum, just to get a feel. People are looking at me, who the hell's this guy, you get obsessed, and you want the feel, you have the proper fingernail length. So you do walk around with an emery board, yeah?
Right, gotcha. All right, well, we are quickly running out of time, but I do want to do your lightning round, and then we'll let you hit some plugs on where people can buy your books, where they can find you on social media, all that. So if you are ready, I'm going to hit the lightning round music for you here. All right, now, Jeff, you should be very pumped up. Not unlike a guy about to chop a karate board after hearing that music. So are you ready for your lightning round?
Yeah. Go ahead. This is new to me. I'm a rookie at this. But
That's fine. The first few are going to be easy. Number one, American League or National League?
National League.
You, sir. Very much the correct answer. There is so much more strategy and fun to the game in the National League than having all nine of the best. Very great answer.
Yeah, and I go to the back when they actually came out with a lot of talent for us with the black players, the Hank Aarons, Ernie Banks, and Willie Mays and stuff. So
yep.
It's been a tradition that they've been more experimental.
Yeah, well, there's just so much more. I think working around that ninth spot in the batting order is the appeal of the entire game. So to take that away and replace it with a DH, I think, is just silly to me. But anyway, all right, question number two, Cubs or White Sox? Probably going to go Cubs since you're a National League guy.
Yeah, Cubs, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know because the White Sox, obviously, with Eddie Gadiel and all that, have a lot more history, so I wasn't.
Well, Bill Beck, I mean, he was the epitome of an owner. So, yeah, I maybe 50-50 on that one. So,
gotcha. All right, question number three. We didn't get to talk about the spitball, but if you had your choice between the two, knuckleball or spitball?
Spitball.
Really?
Yeah. It's more consistent. It breaks more. You can control it, but it's illegal. So that's the point.
Right.
Yeah. Spitball. I throw that, and it definitely is a much more stable pitch, and it's almost unhittable. It really is.
How does the spitball break, real quick? I mean, we can touch on it here real quick. Like, what is the appeal of the spitball? What does it do that's so
okay,
alarming?
You grip the ball. I put some figures online there, I think illustrations, I'll show you pictures. I was holding one. You grip it in a horseshoe area, and you come down without going across the seams. You put some Vaseline there. You don't spit out it anymore. It's high-tech today, Vaseline. And when you throw the ball, you pop it like you pop a watermelon. See, you don't break your wrist. And by doing that, and you can also use arm angle to get more break away or straight down. You just pop it out. It creates the vacuum behind a ball, the same as a knuckleball. Those are the only two pitches in baseball that you want a vacuum behind. And when it goes to the plate, it doesn't spin much. And it just breaks. I mean, unbelievable. And so you're popping the ball, and you want your thumb keeps the ball stable as your fingers at the top are sliding down. When it's sliding down, the ball just goes out of your hand. And quite easy to throw. You could learn that in a day. And all you have to do is make adjustments to make sure you get it over the plate, where a knuckleball will take you a lot longer than a day to actually incorporate the pitch.
Right.
But it's illegal. So,
which way does it break? Is it left, right, or probably down, I'm guessing?
Okay, so as a right-handed pitcher to a right-handed hitter, mostly down, slightly away.
Okay.
So it's almost like a slider. It's almost like a slider going downhill. That's what it would look like. And it breaks so much. I mean, it just is almost impossible to hit. Because you don't see any other pitch in baseball that comes to break the same exact way. So you can't adjust yourself for it. Curveball, you can, a slider, because you see them with various pitches, but you know, you see a spitball. And I saw Perry throw a few. I went to Fenway Park one time, and he's laughing right. like hell, and everybody, manager's running out. Well, he threw it. So they checked the ball, and of course, by then, the catcher's laughing because he already wiped the Vaseline off on his uniform. So yeah.
Well, Gaylord Perry, I saw quite a few of his games when he was pitching for the Indians, like circa 75, 76.
Oh, yeah. This is the time I was talking about. Yeah, I just saw him at Boston in 74, you know, and like in the fifth inning, he threw one. I mean, this thing was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And manager ran out, you know, and he's arguing with the ump, and the catcher's laughing because they know when it's coming, and when it's coming, they just take and they wipe the ball on their uniform and get the Vaseline off. The ump checks and says, hey, it's all right here. So, not a big deal about a spitball is not so much throwing it, how to conceal the Vaseline. You do that underneath the visor of your cap, or the cloth logo of your glove is a nice place because it's invisible. On the
right.
inside of your glove, on the inside of your waistband, there's all sorts of places. So a good spitball pitcher, and I've had one in Britain, and he pitched for me, and he took an hour before the game to preparing his uniform. And it's ironic. If you got time, I'll tell you another half a minute story. We
sure.
were playing in Frankfurt, Germany, against the best Air Force team in Europe. It was the last one on our tour. I had two good young arms. They were both shot. We played a lot of games. So he hadn't pitched in 2 or 3 years, and he came back to England. And I said, okay, just you start tonight, and you try to keep us competitive. We were outmanned almost in every position, too. I said, so we won the game 4-3 and against the best team we'd played all year. And by the sixth inning, it was drizzling, you know, very heavy drizzle. So the ump kept changing balls. So he says, hey, pitch, give me that ball. So he threw him the ball, and the ump went, holy shit, I got grease all over my hand. And I'm watching this, and I'm going, uh-oh, he caught him, right? So all of a sudden, he throws him a new ball. First pitch, the guy hits the ball about 450 feet, rising as he's leaving the field, 10 feet foul. The ump calls timeout, goes in front of the plate, and says, didn't have time to load that one up, did you, huh, pitch? And he laughed. I said, this guy isn't going to call him. The rest of the night, he threw all spitballs, and nobody complained. So, it's a colorful pitch, and colorful people use it, too. But it's tough. It's a tough pitch to hit.
I remember
want to try to hit one.
A year after Gaylord Perry retired, he came on. I don't know if it was the news or what. I was living in Cleveland when I was young, so I figured I guess he was still, like, talking to local CBS news media in the Cleveland area, but it could have been national for all I know. But he came on and actually revealed, like, all of his hiding spots of where he used to hide.
Oh, yeah, he did eventually. You know what was a big asset of him? He wanted you to guess whether he threw the spitball or not. And I'd say 90% of the time he didn't, but people thought he may. So he has a psychology there that, you know, hey, yes, I have it. When are you going to see it? And a lot of the times, you know, he didn't. So they're waiting for it, and then it wasn't. So, and it looks like a fastball coming in. Where a curveball, you can read it coming in, you know, good hitter and stuff. But a spitball, you can't. It looks like that fastball, and then next thing, it just drops down. I mean, whoosh, straight down.
That was the question I was going to ask you, because you said it slows on rotation a little bit. I was wondering if that made it an easy pitch to spot. Like, hey, man, this guy's throwing the spitter, you know?
Not really, because it's coming faster than, say, a knuckleball. The knuckleball, you can. And the knuckleball breaks in many directions before it gets to the plate. A spitball does not break at all until it's on top of you.
Okay.
So that's why it's so hard to read. The knuckleball, you can see it. It's coming in slower, and halfway through it may break one way, flatten out, and then another. So it's easy to identify. The thing is, you know, try to guess where it's going to be when it gets to the plate. Whether the spitball, you know, you're up there. These guys, these major league hitters, they're very finely tuned, and, you know, they're waiting for certain things. They practice hours for their swing. So they see something looks like a fastball coming in. That's why the slider, you know, revolutionized baseball. It looks like a fastball, but the last second breaks away. And so it's the same thing with a spitball. If it were legal, that thing looks like a fastball, and the next thing it just drops out. The bottom of it just drops out. So
gotcha.
It's hard to pick up, even though it doesn't rotate like a fastball, yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. All right, well, just a couple more questions here. I'm going to get into some of the more silly ones here. As you know, most people hate the New York Yankees and Alex Rodriguez both. Therefore, which would be a better fantasy baseball team name, the Stankies or the A-Roids?
A-Roids sound better to me. By the way, did you read what his nephew did yesterday?
I did not, no.
Arizona in a high school national tournament, and I don't think anybody will ever break this record. He had 8 consecutive home runs on 8 pitches. And
his
he was
nephew
facing,
did that?
Yes, and he was facing top high school pitchers in the country. 8 consecutive home runs.
Wow, on
yeah,
8 consecutive pitches, it wasn't like he worked
yes.
the count to hit home. Holy
nope, 8
moly.
Consecutive pitches, 8 swings. He swung at 8 pitches. He may have had a ball thrown to him in a called strike, but he took 8 swings and hit 8 home runs in a row. And he actually, in 12 at-bats, he hit 9 home runs, and 8 of them were consecutive. So that's amazing at any level of ball. I remember one time I played a doubleheader on slow-pitch softball. I hit 7 home runs and 10 at-bats and got huge publicity for it. But that was slow-pitch softball, and we're playing on a field where the fences were pretty short. I can't
right.
imagine any level of baseball, anybody doing that, just the nature of the game. But no, he did it. We got fairly good national news today.
How old is he? Like what
18.
Age groups?
18.
Wow.
High school.
Wow.
It was a national high school tournament. His
so
team finished third.
Somebody's going to be signing that kid pretty quickly then.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they kind of gave a little backhand hint there that he said, they were talking to him about other things, and he said, well, kind of inferring about his uncle, he said, well, you know, I've watched his career, and I want to make sure I don't make some of the same mistakes or something like that.
Right.
And he wasn't talking about hitting technique. He was talking about, you know, the
gummy
the additives to his diet, yeah.
Right. That's funny you talk about power hitting in softball, though, because, you know, I played softball, my God, probably 20 years almost. I think I started when I was 16, and probably even more than that. I think I stopped when I was about 38 or 39. So 23 years, I guess. And the whole time I was a singles hitter, but then like about the last 3 or 4 years, I saw this video that somebody that came with this like really expensive bat that somebody bought teaching you how to power hit. And so all of a sudden, my last 3 or 4 years of my softball career, for lack of a better word, I turned into a power hitter. And I got to a point where I could hit the softball, I want to say 325. And the reason I know that is because there was a park that we used to play in that down the left field line was 330. And I used to be able to put the guy's butt up against that fence, but I never once got it over the 330-foot fence. So that's why I say about 325. But you got to figure that's pretty good. I mean, in some major league ballparks, that's a home run.
That's a good shot. And I played for 3 years, and at the age of 20, I stopped because I could hit right-handed and left-handed. I could hit the ball out of parks. It just was no challenge to me anymore. And I had to see pitching again that did something. one time in Newport, Rhode Island, I was the only person ever put as 330 feet down the line, a four-story warehouse, and I put one on the roof. And I wrote about that.
Oh, my God.
Another time at Cardine's Field, that's the baseball field I sent you the picture of for my new book coming up, I hit a shot in a tournament there. I went to watch the tournament, and a team from Fall River, Mass, there was one guy shot, and they said, you want to play? I ended up being runner-up for the most valuable player. I hit, and it was a long out. One, and evidently somebody measured it. You know, it was the last game of the night when the lights went off, had a measuring tape, went out and measured it at 386 feet. And the guy caught it with back to the plate, and I'm almost around a second. I go, ah, shit, he caught the ball. You know, to me it was a long out. But somebody
right.
actually took it. Providence Journal had a thing, the longest ball ever hit there. So I don't know. I love slow pitch. I hated it in those days. I said, that's it. It's a game for this and that. But I look back, and it gives a lot of people a chance to play that would not be able to play baseball or fast pitch softball. So right. I kind of like the sport today because of participation. You mentioned designated hitter. One thing good about it, forget the major leagues, but in slow pitch softball leagues, amateur baseball leagues, at least you will play 10 players instead of 9 a game. And these are people that work all day and come, and they want to play. They don't want to sit the bench, you know. And
yeah.
So I look at the designated hitter as actually adding another position that somebody can play in. So, yeah, and the major leagues has changed strategy, but other than the major leagues, it's been, I think, an overwhelming success.
Right, yeah, outside of the major leagues, it's definitely a good thing. And even in the major leagues, I believe it has its place. I mean, it's good for the older players that they can still play. But
oh, yeah, absolutely. They got no wheels left or something, but
right.
you know, they can't catch up to the ground ball if they could anymore, but they can still hit the ball. No, absolutely. They can help
yeah.
the younger guys with hitting and stuff, yeah. It does have its place, no doubt. Strategies are totally different, though. You know,
yeah.
When you get the double switch, you know, and stuff like that, where
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't have that in a league with no designated hitter.
Oh man, I get goosebumps talking about it. Like, you know, your pitcher's at 90 pitches, you know he's coming up second in the next inning. It's like, do we let him bat? Do we pull him out?
Yeah.
God, there's just so much more that goes into it. So that's why I like.
Yeah.
It.
And pitchers had to, you know, sometimes there were some good hitting pitchers out there. And they weren't an automatic out. Who was one? Bob Lemon, I think. Bob Lemon hit like, you know, 12, 15 home runs in his career. You know,
yeah.
It was Bob Lemon. And so, you know, a lot of them were just routine, easy outs, but some weren't. And
yeah.
I remember in the 50s and 60s, the Red Sox using, I think it was Tom Brewer, he was a good hitter, actually used them as pinch hitters in a game. In a
yeah.
game, you know, tie game,
wow.
or one run down with two men on base, they'd use one of their better hitting pitchers as a pinch hitter because that was the best hitter on the bench. So those
wow.
days are gone with a designated hitter, and
right.
you just don't see pitchers who can hit anymore. Wakefield could, because he brought him up as a first baseman and changed the pitcher, yeah.
The Pirates, yeah. Well, I know. So the only one that comes to mind right now is CeCe Sabathia. I know that he's a legitimate home run threat every time he comes up to the plate. But the only thing I remember, and it's kind of back to the Cleveland Indians of the mid '70s again. I remember they would bring in reliever Don Hood as a pinch runner a lot of times.
Okay.
So
I remember a couple of times pinch runners because these guys were fast. Yeah.
Yeah,
but the only problem with that is because they don't get on base so much, they may be fast, but what's their knowledge of the game? Remember when Charlie
right.
Finley hired a guy as just designated runner? The guy was supposed to be the fastest man in the world or something. Yet he kept getting picked off first because he didn't even know how to take a lead. So, I mean, so that backfired on him. So, but in those days, too, now I played Little League and Babe Ruth League. I led the league in home runs, RBIs, also in pitching. Usually, your better pitchers with the better athletes and the better hitters. And it's later on in a career where they have to make a choice, a position player or a pitcher. So,
right.
But today, if a good athlete's a pitcher, he just doesn't see his time at bat. So you're not going to see the same combinations we saw in the old days on that.
Right. So, all right, let's go ahead and get through your lightning round here. Question number 6. This is kind of a hard one. I know my answer, but I'm curious.
6, I've only answered 2.
Oh, I'm skipping some. Ted Williams, Willie Mays, or Mickey Mantle, if you could draft
Willie Mays.
One.
Yeah,
because he could do it all.
But Williams, best hitter. Mays, best all-around player, yeah.
Yeah, and Mickey Mantle's probably a close second for best all-around, because he had a little bit more speed than people give him credit for.
He did.
Yeah,
he had bum wheels. Yeah, that was, he played hurt a lot. Mason yeah. knew it all. Stolen bases, fielding, catching, arm. And you know, I was a Giants fan in Rhode Island, of all places, as a teenager. And you'd read about him, or I'd get my AM radio, and at nighttime I'd get the Philadelphia stations or the New York stations. Ninth inning, couple runners on, and Mace coming to the plate. That was money in the bank. I mean, what a clutch hitter that guy was. He did it all.
Right. Well, here, I'll go ahead and skip back to question number five then, because it is Willie Mays related. Would you say that catch that you were talking about in the World Series, would you rate that the greatest catch of all time, or do you think it's probably been, you know, overshadowed by
well,
now?
I would say of all the catches I've seen, yes. Would people have caught, made better catches that we never saw, like in the minor leagues? I'm sure. There's a fellow,
sure.
Tommy Arruda from Fall River, he was a pitcher. In minor league ball. The guy had a 10-cent brain. That's why he never made the majors. But he was AAA for a few years. They put him in a game one night at right field and because he was a great athlete. And I remember reading in the Sporting News at the time, he made a catch that was considered by people there, former major leaguers, everything scouts, the best, the most incredible catch ever made in baseball. So, yes, Mays was the best one I've ever seen. That doesn't necessarily mean it was the best ever, though.
Right. I was going to say, because, I mean, you see on SportsCenter every night the top 10 plays of the night, and, you know, half of them are more, I don't even know what the word is, but they seem like they're more difficult catches than the one Willie Mays made. But then again...
Boy, that was no slouch. That catch was a hell of a catch he made. And the thing is, the awareness to turn around and get the ball back to the infield from that's what amazed me, is how he just didn't continue going and stop. I mean, he turned around on a dime and just flung it right back to the infield with accuracy. So that probably, to me, was more incredible than the catch itself.
Right. Okay. Oh, yeah, good point. All right, question number seven. Now, here's a silly one. When you were learning the knuckleball, certainly there were moments of discouragement. Did Tony the Tiger ever appear to you and encourage you, you'd do better if only you'd eat some Kellogg sugar-coated Frosted Flakes?
No.
I kind of figured that would be your answer on that one. All right, question number eight, another silly one. True or false? We don't need another hero because all we want is life beyond Astrodome. True or false?
Pass.
The correct answer would be false because that's from the movie Thunderdome, so you were wise to pass on that one. All right, now here's a very important one. Yankees or Mets?
Tied.
Oh. Now, as a Willie Mays guy, I thought you were going to go with the Mets on that one, because that is the correct answer. But I want to hear your definition.
I'm looking at the franchise's overall stuff. Yeah, the Miracle Mets are great. Unfortunately, Mays, it was so sad to see him drop a routine fly ball, and when he got a dribble, a single up the middle, got a standing ovation. I mean, here's a man who could put the ball out of any park, and I mean, when I watched that, I was saddened. Willie Mays hit a little dribbler up the middle and got a standing ovation. I look at, yeah, he played for them, but also it was almost like denigrating his greatness. So, and yeah. They both have great traditions, even for a different way, of course. And I loved the Mets when Casey Stengel, remember, he made the statement. He said, I got hitters who can't hit, pitchers who can't pitch, fielders who can't field. He said, can't anybody play this game? I mean, those misfits he had the first year or two. I mean, colorful. When Crane Pool caught a ball, the fans booed him. They came to watch him drop a ball. And when he caught a fly ball, they booed him. I mean, you know any other team in baseball where they'd boo their own player for catching a ball? So,
well,
yeah, so they were magic in their own way. And the Yankees, the tradition, you can't... you can't question that. So that's why I tie on that one.
Gotcha. I fell in love with the Mets during, the Buckner through the legs World Series. What was that, 86? 86 Mets?
Yeah.
God, I love that team because they were just relentless and just refused to give up, and then I've been on board with them ever since. As a matter of fact, I was living in Atlanta in 1985. I should have told this to Antonio Reed. I was living in Atlanta in 85, and that was when they had the longest game ever. It was the Mets versus the Braves. And I watched that game live as it went till like almost 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's when I really started kind of liking the Mets. I'm like, I kind of like this team. And then, you know, the next year, you know, that's when they won the World Series with, and it was such a colorful team with Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Gary Carter. So, yeah, that's kind of, people always ask, why do you give a shit about the Mets when you live in Columbus, Ohio? That's why, you know.
Well, I was a San Francisco Giant fan from Rhode Island, you know, and people looked at me like I was crazy, you know, and also they had an almost all black team in 1962, and I followed them every game. And even though there wasn't a lot of racism for a few blacks in Rhode Island, I was called a derogatory name for liking a team with all with black players on it. But so you fandom, you know, how I became a Giants fan. 9 years old, I had an old black and white TV in my house, and I got a fuzzy picture. It was raining in Rhode Island of a New York Giant game, and Johnny Antonelli was pitching. And the name intrigued me, so I became a Giant fan because of Johnny Antonelli and his name. So
wow.
There's no logic in why you choose a team to root for. And,
right.
Now, that Mets team in 86, they were similar to the one in 69. They weren't supposed to win, and they did. So I can see the mystique for a Mets fan. This is like deja vu all over again, you know, different names,
right.
Different players, and... but they had some good horses out there, too. You mentioned Strawberry and Gooden. I saw Gooden here live in San Diego. His first game he ever pitched in the major leagues. He was 19 years old. And I was there with a friend who was a good baseball player, played for Michigan State. He played for me in England. That's how I met him. And then he moved to San Diego. I did eventually. And when at the end of the game, I said, we're going to hear a lot more about that guy right there out there tonight. I mean, it was just unbelievable. It was his first major league game, and you could tell right away that guy had it, you know. And unfortunately, he had problems other way and injuries that he didn't extend his career to the point, say, a Tom Seaver did or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that's going back to the early Mets. Like, you know, you talk about workhorses, Nolan Ryan and Tom Seaver on the same pitching staff.
Jerry
Guzman,
I mean, Seaver, he was incredible. He could warm up, and the catcher could talk to the fans and hold his mitt out, and he hit the guy's glove. And I had a fellow I managed in Holland. I ran a picture of him on Facebook. Big, tall, black guy, about 6'5", was standing there. He's got his arm around me. I coached him, and they thought he was over the hill, but he played in the Mets organization for 3 years at one time before he got injured. And he said, watching Seaver pitch was the most bizarre, surreal experience because of his control. And he made the adjustment when he lost a little bit on his fastball. He started mixing his pitches up more and kept good control, and he pitched at age 42. So he was the epitome of what you call a pitcher, not just a thrower.
Right. That was kind of Greg Maddux ended up doing kind of the same thing, too. When he lost speed, he just, I mean, he always had great control anyway, but he just kind of stepped it up to another level.
Who's that?
Maddux comes to Greg.
Oh,
Maddux.
Yeah. But yeah, he was always a control pitcher and a stuff pitcher anyway, and he was smart. Yeah, but he just lasted a long time. Sure.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
So you know, they, you know, these guys, all the greats, there was something about them that just transcended their physical ability. They could adjust. They could adjust in the right way, and a lot of hitters now. You know, as they got older, they lost a little power, and they changed, and they became harder to strike out. But they were still valuable to their team. Just separates the great players of all time from, you know, the average or fairly good ones.
Right. All right. Who would you say? What would you say would be the worst name for somebody who hates baseball? Aaron DeField or Darby I? Worst name for
I'll go with the second one on that one.
Yeah, Darby I would be pretty bad, yeah.
just the sound of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Number 11, who would you say is the greatest pitcher of all time? would it, and I'll even throw some names at Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, but then you got like Walter Johnson, Sandy Koufax, I think probably are four good names to start with. Any of them or somebody different?
Okay, modern times, Sandy Koufax, without a doubt the best pitcher I've ever seen. All-time, Hoss Radburn, Providence Grace. 1884, he won 60 games and lost 12. Pitched the last 28 games, days straight of the season, 127. And he's in the Hall of Fame. You can check it out. He's the 10th person ever inducted to the Hall of Fame.
I've heard that.
Old Hoss Radburn, and colorful character. He could put so much stuff on the ball that when he played before the majors at Barnstorm, and they would go and have people check the balls out. They even used to have pastors over there bless the balls and make sure the devil wasn't using them. Honestly, this is how good the guy was. And
wow.
He retired from, again, he's a colorful player. He retired from baseball, opened up a pool hall in Indiana, and died at age 43 of syphilis. So that's my choice of the best pitcher of all time.
Wow. Well, let me give you a sidebar on that. What is it, because this is the thing that a lot of people don't get, and I myself have never really figured it out, why is it that back then pitchers could pitch every single game and go the entire nine innings, and nowadays, you know, if a guy reaches 100 pitches one day out of five, he's got to worry about his rotator cuff coming off. Is it just because the styles were different, or, you know, what's the answer to that?
Okay, there are a lot of variables on that. First of all, I'm against this pitch count. To me, psychologically, when I was given the ball as a pitcher, Little League, Babe Ruth League, amateur ball, I would assume I'm going out and pitch a complete game. And if I ever was getting taken, I don't remember ever being taken out of a game. And I got hit hard a couple times. You know, not to say, you know, that I always, you know, through true shutouts or anything. You know, that would be the biggest insult in the world, that manager coming yanking me. That was the mentality I went in with. I'm not going to go in and pitch half a game and have a relief pitcher. And today when they have pitch counts and I see kids, so say a 14 or 15-year-old, you know, he's being scouted and they're talking to him. They say, oh, what's your repertoire or something? Instead of saying fastball, slider or something like that, he'll say, I can throw 65 pitches a game. So psychologically, they're already of the mindset they can't throw any more. So I think it's not right. Nolan Ryan is against this. He's for building arm strength up, you know, with long tosses. And so I haven't seen too many studies on it that have gone in-depth, but you're right. In the old days, don't forget, though, in the old days, some of them didn't throw as hard. They didn't have the pitch repertoire they have today and the travel time. So, you know, it was a big deal. You travel from New York to Boston in those days. If you went to Cleveland, that was a hell of a road trip. And
yeah.
You tried to bunch them up, Cleveland, Chicago. Today, I mean, they're playing in Boston one day and the West Coast the next day. So, you know, so when you're traveling so much, it just grinds you down. And your overall body strength is going to suffer from it. And so that, I think probably that's the only reason I can see legitimate. But when I was called shut a pitcher down, you know, and that's, today that's common. You ask somebody, you know, what their pitching style is, and they give you their pitch count. I found that outrageous, you know. So maybe somebody should do an in-depth study about pitchers of different eras, how many had to retire because of arm problems, how many career changed and they became mediocre, as opposed to today's pitchers. And the advent of the relief pitcher, you know, that's changed strategies. I mean, when you have a guy coming for one inning, Jim Cotton, his last year, do you know he used to come in for one pitch?
Really?
One pitch against a left-handed hitter. And a certain count on him, he would come in and throw one pitch and get taken out of the game. That's how specialized it got. So I don't know. I mean, what's the better strategy? You know, in a bullpen in the old days, you had eight people in it. Your top four pitchers were the starters. Your next four that weren't quite as good as the starters were the relief pitchers. Today,
right.
The relief pitchers, especially the closers, now they're talking about the guys setting up for the closer.
Right.
To be crucial in making $10 million a year. And then they're talking about the middle relief guy who sets up for the setup man for the closer.
Right.
So, you know, so it turned out the closer was the most important guy. Now it's going right down the line. So you get kids in high school that got good, powerful arms. All of a sudden, they become closers, and they can't pitch a complete game anymore. When I pitched, I mean, you would have had to drag me off that field. I mean, right. Honestly, to get me out of a game. And I don't even recall getting taken out of a game early. I don't. And I pitched in quite a few games before I got injured at age 20 with a car accident. But that was my leg. I got my knee crushed. So, and it was the leg that you come down on. So my fastball lost the top of I had incredible control with two-speed curveballs. And after that, when I tried to make a comeback, the control wasn't there, and the break of some of them broke a lot and some didn't. So right. That injury hurt there. But I could not even envision, going out there thinking, well, let me get 5 good innings and then we'll have some. No way. I mean, no way.
Right.
So I don't know. What's your view on that about, you just said it. In the old days, these guys seemed to be able to throw Hoss Radbrin through 28 consecutive days. Complete games. They only had two pitchers on the team, and the other guy named was Sweeney, and he got taken out of a game, and he got offended. He went put in right field because they had a big lead, and he walked off the field and never came back again. And then Sweeney, about 5 years later, murdered somebody and ended up dying in prison. So I love the colorful tales of the old-timers.
Right.
Today, I don't know. I had a private coach for 5 years, and then I went to college and did scout. And so the game's lost its colorful characters, too.
Right.
But on the other, I'd like to see in-depth studies done. I haven't seen one yet on the concept of pitch counts as opposed to, the old days. Like, a complete game. What is a major league leader today? A complete game? 3-4 games, maybe?
Maybe,
you look at even in the 70s, the guys are 21 complete games, 18 complete games, and it may be half of the others, they pitched 7 or 8 innings. It was
right.
Just expected of them. And but a lot of them, Steve Carlton and them, they pitched into the 40s. So I don't know. I'd like, again, to see the definitive study done on that.
It really is.
That's a good one for you to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is kind of an enigma that develops in our lifetime. I mean, because, we're talking about the 70s and Gaylord Perry and all that. Back at that stage, it was only a 4-man rotation. And then somewhere in the 80s, it flipped over to a 5-man rotation with closers. The relief pitcher was kind of a big deal in the 70s. I remember, Mike Marshall was always winning, Rolaid's relief pitcher of the year and all that. And then
But that was the beginning of the glorifying of relief pitchers. Up until then, they were your first four worst pitchers out of your 8-man pitching staff.
Right.
And if a guy in relief, had some good games, all of a sudden he went in the rotation, and the guy in the rotation got into the bullpen. So it was kind of like, once you know you're in the bullpen, hey, I'm going to be sitting around and not doing too much work here. And by the time they went in the game, the team was already ahead by 8 runs or behind by 8 runs. So nobody even looked at them. But no, today it's all. And I hate to use the term, in my day, that to me is bullshit. But you look back and you question some of the things. I mean, you're a wrestling fan, right? I mean, how many times you hear guys say that? In my day. You remember Irv Noren for the Yankees?
No, I'm not familiar with that name.
Mickey Mantle's teammate, lifetime .295 batting average. And I knew Irv close for about 2 years. His daughter published a sporting magazine. I was the editor in the 90s. Irv was a hell of a good ball player. Matter of fact, he started center field for the Yankees, and he got injured, and he was out for about 2 weeks and never saw center field again because the replacement was a young guy called Mickey Mantle. But Irv, he always used to say, in my day. I said, Irv, one day, I said, cut the bullshit. And, he's in the 70s, and I'm a lot younger talking to him. So I said, I'm going to mention one word to you. One word. And I said, slider. And they didn't throw sliders in his day. It was only until the early 70s that pitch came into vogue. And it changed baseball immensely. Another quick story about Irv played for the Washington Senators. He was a good outfielder. Occasionally played first base. You ever heard of the name Camilo Pascual? He was a submarine pitcher. He had a big, big name in the 50s. And he didn't speak much English. So one day he's out there, and there was runners on first and second. So Irv's left-hander playing first base. So it's a bunt. Instead of going for the guy at first and letting the sacrifice go through, he decides to try to get the guy at third. He airmailed the ball. 2-run score. And the guy ends up on second base. Wow. So next batter, he bunts the guy from second to third. Ear tries to do it, air melts it again. So he goes to Pasquale, gives him the boy. He bets him on the back. He said, don't worry, we'll come back. He said, you know, this is just temporary and everything. And he said, Pasquale looked at him and just stared at him and says, Irv Noren, good outfielder, horse shit first baseman, and walked away from him. some of these stories in the old timers, I've got the good stories. But he was, you know, in my day, and they didn't throw sliders in his day. And that just changed. That just changed the game immensely. And you ever faced a good slider?
No, and as a matter of fact, like if somebody asked me what's the major difference between a slider and a curve, I don't know that I could really give them a definitive answer on that.
Well, a slider looks like a fastball. A curve looks like a curveball. You can read the spin. Curveball goes down, and it's much slower. A slider is maybe 1 mile an hour slower than a fastball. And it looks like a fastball and just explodes at the last second. So you think it's a fastball. And toward the end of my career, I started seeing sliders. I did not like them, I'll tell you right now. You know, I wish they'd never invented the pitch. I didn't do too bad against them, but it just changed your whole attitude as a hitter. It really did. You couldn't dig in, wait for the fastball, and then a good batter won't get fooled as much with the changeup, because a good batter, if you watch, they take their stride, and their hands are still behind and back, and then they explode on the ball. Where an average hitter will start swinging as he's taking his stride. So say you're at the plate, and a guy fools you with that changeup, and you've taken your stride, you still have all of your arms to execute the swing with. So that's why a curveball, even if it fooled you, you could still hit the thing. But if a slider fooled you, you're thinking fastball, you're swinging fastball, you can't stop. And all of a sudden that thing just goes like almost at a right angle, it looks like. Now, of course, not literally, but it's a tough pitch to hit. It really is.
Gotcha.
So maybe
difference between a splitter and a sinker, then. Sinker's much slower, where the splitter just looks like a fastball.
Yeah. That's a good analogy. That's a good analogy. And that splitter, especially this guy, well, what's his name? Tanaka? I mean, I hear he's got an incredible splitter from what I've been reading, and stuff's in the dirt, and he's got guys swinging at it. And, you know, I've seen guys that throw like that, a couple old-timers. And it's so hard to – it's easy to say, lay off that pitch. It's so hard to actually do it when you're at the plate. You know, you'll miss one, right? And you'll go, nah, he ain't going to get me next time. He throws the same pitch next time and gets you again with it. So that's, again, that's a change in pitching style. This is a pitch that 30 years ago was unheard of, and now is not commonplace, but a lot of pitchers use it. You know, the cup figure, you know.
Where does Mariano Rivera's, well, he's retired now, but he throws the cutter. Where does the cutter fit into the slider?
Cutter is a halfway between a fastball and a slider.
Okay.
And I threw a cutter when I was young. I didn't know what it was. And a slider, there's a couple ways of throwing it. You want the pitch to be off center, so you can lift a finger at the last second. You can twist your wrist sideways, where a cutter is basically slightly off center, and you snap your wrist like you would a fastball. So it doesn't quite break as hard as a slider, but by the same token, it looks so much like a fastball that it can fool you. So that's what a cutter is. And a cutter, you can adjust it for the amount of break it's going to be. So it's not a slider, it's not a fastball, it's in between.
Gotcha.
I hope I answered your question on that one.
You actually did. Yeah, you actually did. Some of it, you know, I guess it depends on the pitcher, but it could be as simple of an answer as, well, you know, the slider breaks from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, where the cutter breaks from 2 to 7 o'clock, you know, one of those dealios, too.
If you want to use that kind of terminology, I guess I'm not up on a lot of the modern stuff. I really haven't followed the game. I'm starting to follow it again, and what got me interested again was Wakefield's career, and I started following him. And I'm watching some of the other stuff. I look at it sociologically today, and I see the big money involved, and I look at it for different reasons. And you know, when a team is forced to stand and sing "God Bless America" in the seventh inning, I find that outrageous. You know, so I look at it's a baseball game. It used to be take me out to the ball game. Baseball game is where people of working class, business class, upper class, they all sat together and ate hot dogs and cheered for a team or against a team. No, it's a show of patriotism. And how about the guy a few years ago? What happened to the guy in New York a few years ago who had to take a leak? Remember that? And during the playing of God Bless America, he wanted to go out and take a leak, and the cops dragged him out and threw him out the back door of the stadium and hollered at him. He said, if you hate this country this that much, why don't you move? Why don't you leave it? You remember that instance? And I know he sued them. I'm sure he must have got some big bucks from the Yankees for that one. And, you know, outrageous. Well, I don't know. If I was the guy, I would have said, okay, I would have just taken it out and taken the leak right there in the stands. But then again, he would have got arrested for indecent exposure. So,
right.
So things like that. That's the way I look at it today. Haircuts, they have to have a certain look about them. NBA now, they have secret cameras out there that during the national anthem, their arms have to be at a certain angle. And if they're not, they get fined $25,000.
Oh, my
God. The whole concept of sports is to have a good time. You had serious guys on teams. You had clowns. That was the beauty of it. Today, it's just, well, it's business. So business, you're not allowed to, be a little eccentric. So that's my gripe against the sport. I love the sport. And I tell people I'd rather watch a game in Paris where the guys had to travel 50 miles, play on a crappy, dumpy field, because there were seagulls hanging around in a dump on the other side of the fence. And because they love the game, then I would watch a major league game here. And then people can't understand what I'm talking about when I say that.
Well, you and I think a lot alike in that regard, I think, because I greatly enjoy going to a minor league baseball game more than I enjoy going to a pro game. I mean, those guys are trying to make it to the majors, but it's just less commercialized somehow, and I enjoy it a lot more than I do the major league.
And you have fans becoming more involved, and you'll have some freshman run out in the field or something, they'll cheer them, and they'll drag them. I mean, it's a different atmosphere. During the strike, when was it, 1981 or something, the Cape Cod League used to draw 50 people a game, started drawing 5,000. And they kept a lot of fans after the strike was resolved because they said, hey, we didn't realize we enjoy baseball as much now. Cape Cod League is loosely affiliated with the majors. And I know because the Sunset League in Newport, Rhode Island, we used to play games against them. Most of the time, the Sunset League teams would win because we'd have more depth. We had guys who played in the minors and their career was done. Well, the Cape Cod League, maybe four or five starters were excellent. And the other players weren't because it was a grooming ground for the major leagues. So I'm familiar with that league. And when people started watching this, when the baseball strike was on, that intrigued them. And the league today is flourishing, and they're getting fans because of that. So you're right. Yeah. You go see a minor league game, and a whole different atmosphere. You may see a hole in the fence or something like that, and it brings you back. It brings you back to wow. You know, this is real baseball. These guys are playing the game because they love it. You know, and sure they have this Triple A. They have on their minds. You know, they better watch it and play right. You know, to get signed for the majors, but. A lot of those guys just still have the love of the game as the premise of them playing the game. Well, right. Major leagues, I question the guys' love of the game, the way they talk about it sometimes, you know. It just is, it's just weird. And,
right.
You know, if you ever went to Europe and watched some teams play over there, the caliber of ball, some of it is not good, I'll tell you right now. But the enthusiasm, you would see, it'd blow your mind, it really would. And, and terrible refereeing or umpiring, and you look at it, and in hindsight, you say, you know, Jesus, they were out there, they took a lot of abuse, you know, verbal abuse from people, but they're doing it because they love it. I recall a basketball ref I had growing up, and this guy was horrible. He had glasses 4 inches thick. You know, he'd call a foul. One team would have red jerseys, another one yellow. He'd call a foul on 23 blue, and I hated the guy. And I denigrated that guy, call him every name in the book. He would see me away from the court and treat me like I was the nicest guy in the world. I said, Jesus, this guy doesn't get it. Then later on, I realized today, refereeing was his whole life. And sure, he blew a lot of calls for my team. He blew just as many with the opposition that actually helped my team. So, again, he was doing it because he loved to do it. And So as you get, I guess maybe as you get older, you see more. I don't know if it's age that mellows you and stuff like this. Because I was the umpire and referee's worst enemy. And about age 21, I changed. I had a referee come up to me one day, who I admired, and I said hi to him, and he walked by and didn't acknowledge me. And this is like on the street. And I went up and I said, "Hey, hi." He says, looks at me. He says, "Archer." He said, "I'm not going to talk to you only if I absolutely must." He said, "You're a little crazy, and you're the worst sport I've ever seen in my life." And he walked away from me. At first, I said, "Yeah, okay, screw him." Then I thought, you know, he's right. But 4 years later, I met the guy, and I changed totally. And now I had my fast pitch softball team. We used to draw about 1,000 fans a game. He came in a sports shop where I worked. I go, "Oh shit, he's going to chew my ass out." He said, "Hey, Archer," he said, "I watched your team play. You guys are good." He said, "I love the way you conduct yourself on the field. I actually got a sportsmanship award. I wouldn't have ever thought of that earlier in life." So at first, you know, you think one way. Then later on, I don't know if it's mellowing out or you actually see that these people, even though they're not competent, you know, their desire is there. And to me, desire is more important than skill. And does it make sometimes for the best quality of ball, but in the long run, they did it for the right reason.
Right. Well, if you can.
Did you play
it,
a lot of organized sports, like in leagues, or?
Oh.
But slow pitch. You said you played slow pitch softball, right?
I did play slow pitch, which I guess was organized. But in school and stuff, no, I played Little League up until sixth grade, and then it was weird. Like Little League ended, and then you kind of had to join with junior high. And I didn't quite grasp the concept of why aren't there 10 teams anymore? Why is there only one? And so I kind of, you know what I mean? Like I just, I kind of lost interest in it. And then I tried out again in, I think, 11th grade. And by in that 5-year span, the game had kind of passed me by. And I was the last one cut, but I was cut from the baseball team. And then at that point on, I just focused on softball only.
Well, those are crucial years of development that you missed.
Yeah.
Your body's growing. You're learning different techniques and stuff. Yeah, so I can see that. But even in slow pitch softball, did you have some umpires that were traditionally terrible?
Probably.
There's no balls and strikes. Forget the balls and strikes. It's not like baseball where, you know, the ump has to be on every play. But, I mean, safer out calls, foul and fair, stuff like this. Did you have some guys really that were bad and they umpired every year?
I'm sure there were, you know, but I don't know. I tend to not dwell on that kind of, like, I'm not a scorekeeper kind of person, like, even arguing with wives or girlfriends or so. So even if that happened, I probably wouldn't commit memory to.
We always had a couple in our area, and they always got hired by some league. I remember they started a new league one time, basketball league in Fall River, and the president of the league's talking about, and then I got a franchise in there because the league was made of all the slow-pitch softball teams, but even though I wasn't there, I played fast-pitch in Fall River, they allowed me to come in. And he said, "I want to make an announcement." He said, "I'm so proud to say we have hired one of the most experienced referees in Fall River, in the history of Fall River." And I go, "Oh, shit, no, here it comes. Mike," and I won't say the last guy's last name. I thought he was dead today. And I went, "Oh, no, you know." So here's this league with all these good ball players. He's got a blind referee. Can't even tell uniform colors out there. Another time, a guy didn't even shoot the ball. And he went to the foul line. He called a foul. And he says, "Was the basket good?" He goes, "Basket's good." He didn't even shoot the ball. And so, but he always got hired. So that was my point. So I didn't know in your leagues if you always had one or two guys like that. But some league would always pick them up and allow them to referee or umpire. I thought it was terrible back in those days. Now I look at it and say, great, more power to them. You know, they allowed a guy to live his life happy. So,
right.
Again, that's just changing attitudes over the years.
Right. Well, believe it or not, we actually went, I mean, the show has an overtime kind of built-in buffer to it, but that's quickly running out. We actually went an hour and 6 minutes over on your interview, so congratulations, you just broke a record, but I mean, that means it was a great interview because, like, you were...
Is it sudden death overtime or what?
Yeah, we're down to, like, about 18 minutes, so we do got to wrap it up, but...
Okay.
I do want to throw in real quick that, like, while we were talking, I've got the Rockies-Marlins game on in the background. The Marlins cheerleaders did actually make an appearance on top of the dugout on TV while we were talking, so I just thought that was worth pointing out. But anyway, please take take the next minute or two, let people know, tell them about your books, tell them where they can buy them, let them know where they can find. I found you on social media on Twitter, but I noticed you've never tweeted anything. I found you there, but
no.
You know, let people know where they can find you on Facebook or, you know, whatever else you're on. You know, take the next couple minutes.
Okay, Facebook, I'm as Jeff Archer. And I use it fairly liberally. You see that, you know. I'm not a fanatic. My whole life isn't around there. But I talk about sports. I talk about religion. I talk about politics. So some people are quite surprised. Somebody with a sports background also has a deep political background, especially my politics, to be considered radical left. But usually the two don't mix. So I get that on there. I have a website called MalcolmLaGauche.com. I've done 841 articles. Usually they're in-depth. They're politically oriented, although some are satire. I've written quite a few satirical articles. I had a book published in 1995 called Strike Four, Adventures in European Baseball. And the title came from in England when I saw a magazine with a picture of a baseball player from Nottingham on it. We didn't get publicity in those days. And I said, this is fantastic. I got a call from one of the managers of my league. He said, you see that? I said, yeah. He said, have you read the article? I said, no. He said, when you read it, you're going to be pissed off. So I read it, and here's what the reporter said. He's explaining baseball. In baseball, you were allowed three strikes. On the fourth, you're out. So that was why I called the thing Strike Four. The book did well. It's kind of making a comeback in Britain as a cult book now. A whole new generation is there. And it's being sold, as I told you, as a collectible for over $200 on some sites, which I think is robbing people. But and I was going to do a follow-up with that called Strike 4.1, The Untold Stories. And I said, wait a minute, I got so many stories to tell that were just not in Europe. So I'm now halfway through a book called The Humorous and Bizarre World of Baseball. And it concludes my career at age 8. All the way up till 34 when I walked off the field in Rotterdam, the Netherlands, for my last game. And it's some pretty risque stuff in there. I mean, there's a chapter called The Brutal Hand Job, things like this. So it's a real tell-all book, not like the gangbang that never was. So, you know, it's sociological. It's funny. And by the way, Strike Four, a reviewer from the Syracuse Daily News once called it the most bizarre book ever written on baseball. And it was an accolade, so that tells you, you know, my attitude and how I actually put it into words. So that book will be out in about a year. It's going to be 600 pages and over 100 photos and newspaper clippings over the years. And you saw the cover. It's the oldest field in the United States, Cardines Field in Newport, Rhode Island, and it's still being right. used. And I played and managed there from 1969 to 74, and like I told you, it was magic just walking through the to the stadium, whether I was a fan, player, or manager. So I look at different aspects of baseball, the beauty of it, not just Bill Lee one time in a documentary, he asked about baseball cards, and his son came up to him and said, hey, Pop, I got a Bill Lee rookie card. What do you think that's worth? He said, about a nickel. It's a piece of cardboard. And he refused to let his kids collect them. He said, I will teach them the beauty of the game. I will teach them how to run, how to hit, and how to throw. But he said, I will not let them get into faults, things like that. So, you know, and I'm not a purist in any way. I don't like that word. And to me, purist is somebody who goes by the original rules of baseball, 1845, 21 runs, you win a game. You catch the ball in one hop, it's an out. And I used to hear that term all the time, and I wrote an article one time, there is no such thing as a purist. Guess what? In the last few years now, there's been leagues in Connecticut and Rhode Island start using the old rules from 1845. So they are purists, but they're the only ones. So
right.
I don't call myself a purist. I just love the game. I love every aspect of it. And for every major leaguer you see, there's tens of thousands of normal people who work 8 hours a day and go out and play ball at nighttime. And they are much more interesting than major leaguers, in my opinion. And that's what I write about.
Gotcha. Well, I'll tell you what. Whenever you get to the point where that book's about to come out, I mean, we'd love to have you back on the show to talk about it and plug it. And so, you know, whenever you reach that point, just, I mean, you know how to get a hold of me. Let me know, and we'll make room for you. Get you on the air
Maybe
again.
We should go over some other subjects, too, in the future. Whenever you have the time you're looking for a guest and you don't have one out there, give me a call or write to me, and We'll come up with a subject. If there's none there, we'll make one up. We'll have a good discussion.
That sounds like a good idea, yeah, because I know you've got some political views and stuff, too, so that sounds like a lot of fun. So, anyway, on that note, I do got to get going because we got to hit our geek news before I do run out of time. But, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I really appreciate it. And do you want to just spell your last name real quick or at least the Lagosche part so people can find the website?
Okay, sure Lagosche, you know, if you go to Google, you'll see there's like 250,000 entries, you know, because a lot of people have picked up my work in a lot of languages. The first name is M-A-L-C-O-M, and the second name is L-A-G-A-U-C-H-E. My column is called Lagosche is Right. There's a play on words meaning the left is right. And I was accused of stealing Rush Limbaugh's line, Rush is Right, a few years ago. Well, I came out with Lagosche is Right about 15 years before he ever used that term. So my name is Jeff Archer, as it sounds, so they can look that way. And I got to say, I had a good time, Johnny. You know, you asked some good questions and you know, beyond the normal stuff, you know. Well, how many games did you play? What was your batting average? You know, stuff like this. So,
right.
You know, it's a good comprehensive eccentric look at sports. And to me, I agree with Skip Gehry. I interviewed him one time, and I was honored to before a Padres game. But he always used to say, if you remember him on TV, he said, in the department store of life, sports is the toy section.
That is a very good quote, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that, you know. You got to take it seriously, but, I mean, not to the point now where, you know, some guy blows his nose the wrong way, and you got or a kid. Oh, this is outrageous! A kid in New Hampshire got basketball player of the year. I don't know if you're high school player of the year. I don't know if you read about that. So, he tweeted something, bragging about his team because they beat another team. A little bit of bravado. They took the award away from him.
Wow!
He earned it. He earned it, and they took it away from him, and they gave it to the runner-up. That's right there. Just tells me today how sports has taken a bad turn when, you know, it's more important than political correctness. And, you know, it wasn't a racial thing, nothing like that. It was just, you know, well, my team's better than yours. You guys suck or something. You know, I mean, you know,
right.
We all did. We all used to gloat a little bit. And I learned early on, you know, not to do that. I remember coaching when I was 16 and had a team, and I predicted we're going to win a tournament. And our first opponents, they were a chance of another league. And I went publicly and says, yeah, they only have one good player, and he's not even playing in this tournament. We lost 64-13. And I was ridiculed. And I said one day, well, I better not start talking like that. And I always, after that day, one thing about me, I was still crazy with the officials, but, you know, when you win, don't gloat. Because there's going to be a day when you're going to be on the other side, and you ain't going to like the other guys gloating over you. So, but, you know, it's a natural for a 16-year-old kid to brag. Not about himself, his team. Wow, we beat you guys, you know, something like that. And he had the award taken away from him. Outrageous.
Unbelievable. All right, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Yeah, like I said, when you're ready to come back on, let us know. And, folks, that's going to wrap it up. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the Geek News. So stay tuned.
Hello, sci-fi fans, it's me, George Norris here. And when I'm not manning the mic at Ghost to Ghost, well, I'm listening to Beyond the Truth on Smart Mark Radio. Because they don't talk about Ouija boards, so I don't get spooked.
George, shut up.
Nope. Sorry, Mr. Bell. Say, did you buy gold or solar-powered sea crane radios?
Shut up.
Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. on SmartMarkRadio.com.
Hey, I'm Fred Meat, defensive back for the Boondock Saxons. Hey, kid, get away from my Betamax collection. That's it. 3 weeks in the closet for you. I am doing a new thing now.
In partnership with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters organization of Greater Boondock, I am spending time with fatherless tots being a big bother to them, so they know what it is like to have a male authority figure around when they are causing mischief. Hey, there's Tom Crash, our quarterback. He's a big bother, too.
Hey, Freddy. Boy, it sure is fulfilling being a big bother to fatherless youth. I had Jimmy here wax his car and told him he could drive it this weekend if he scored high on his math test. When he got an A-, I grounded him for a week and took it out myself cruising uptown.
If you want to be like Tom and I,
hey, Jimmy,
and help serve your community,
just run down to the corner and get your old Uncle Tommy a pack of smoke.
By
huh?
being a big bother for unruly tots in your
yeah,
neighborhood
yeah,
who are in need of a male authority figure to teach them a thing or two.
Whatever they want. No, you can't get yourself anything.
Visit
www.bigbothers.org
or dial 1-800-BOTHERS. That's 1-800-BOTHERS.
Punk.
Remember, if you don't have a father, have a bother.
To become a smartassaholic, check out our online magazine at smartasses.net for replays of our radio show's audio humor, pay-per-view predictions, the Smartasses Hot Chick of the Month, and official Smartasses paraphernalia, as well as entertainment articles, videos, celebrity news, free sarcastic e-cards, geek culture, and one of the four largest annual top 100 sexiest women lists in the world.
What kind of geek are you?
I'm a geek in the band.
Why, I'm an anime geek.
I'm a furry.
I am a chat room geek.
I am a Marvel Comics geek.
I am a DC Comics geek.
You know that, chum?
Back at ya.
I am an RPGG, role-playing game geek.
Well, I'm a computer geek. Wiz, geek. The computer geek.
I am a crossword puzzle geek.
I'm a Harry Potter geek.
I am a Dungeons and Dragons.
I'm a video gamer geek, bro.
Well, I don't know, but I think I'm a science fiction geek.
Oh, my. Hi, Mr. Trek Geek.
Well, I'm a doctor, not a Trek geek.
You have no honor if you're not a Star Trek geek.
Well, they asked me to be a Star Trek geek, and I made it so.
Hey, I'm a World of Warcraft geek. Fuck at the moon.
Whatever kind of geek you are, Smartasses has you taken care of. Log on to smartasses.net and click the Got Geek button. All sorts of t-shirts, mugs, and other gifts for geeks. And by the way, Smartass's Gifts for Geeks is also the home of the 24x36-inch Ultimate Word Search poster. And if you can't defeat it, I'ma laugh and call you a bitch.
Looking for more Smartasses? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/smartasses.net. You can also find us on funnierdie.com/smartassesnet. And don't forget to follow us on Tumblr at smartassesnet.tumblr.com.
Now, my fellow Americans, when I'm not off shooting zombies with my infamous Predator drones, Michelle, Sasha, Malia, and I are listening to Smartasses Radio. So, God bless you. God bless America, and God bless Smartasses Radio.
To interact with Smartasses Radio live on the air, follow us on Twitter and tweet your thoughts to the host at SmartassesNet using the hashtag Hail Jackie. Smartasses Radio. To call in and talk to the hosts, dial 646-478-5863. Or click on the blue letter S to call in via Skype. And now, back to Smartasses Radio.
Welcome back, folks. Without further delay, let's go ahead and get into this week's installment.
Geek News.
of Geek News. April 15th is usually known for one reason only, Tax Day. However, this year, citizens of North and South America are in for something a little more special. On the cosmic schedule this April are a full lunar eclipse and a Mars opposition. So, how does all that work exactly? Well, we all know that a full lunar eclipse occurs when the Earth is situated directly between the Sun and the Moon. Hence, the Earth casts its shadow straight on the surface of the usually bright full moon. That will commence at 1:58 a.m. on April 15th, and it lasts for a couple hours. But what is a Mars opposition? Well, as the planets in the solar system revolve in elliptical patterns, they are sometimes closer and further away from the other planets. In this case, Mars is closer to Earth than it has been since 2007. So many still remember back in 2003 when Mars was extremely bright and visible to the naked eye for weeks. This event is similar, except that the proximity of Mars is smaller at this time. Mars is going to be a mere 50 million miles away. So on April 8th, a week from tomorrow, as the sun is setting in the west, gazers should look directly to the east, and they will discover a bright red dot on the celestial fabric. It is said that Mars will appear brighter than ever, and even, brighter than the Sirius, that bright star within the Canis Major, which philosophers often look up to when deep in thought outside at night. So we're going to have to cut the geek news short, but I do want to wrap up the show. If you haven't been to Smartasses Magazine online,